Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, you can back us on Patreon at patreon.com/Ragnarok.
All the cool people do.
We put out a new listener survey, which will help us learn more about you guys and what you want to see in the future. So if you could take a few minutes, the link to the survey is in the episode description, and it's also on our social media. If you could fill it out and answer some questions, it would be a really big help. Thank you.
It's not a poll.
We here at Ragnarok would like to thank the following patrons. Chados.
Steve Ariza.
Michael Davis.
Steven Vest.
Brownie Davis.
Wee Willie Wilson.
Wheelchair Jim.
Savarik.
James Burns.
Boy Harkin.
Michael Drescher.
And several bats.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
Boom, we're recording.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to another Ragnarok actual play. Tonight, we are playing a Fate...
Now I'm ready! Hello, everyone!
We're playing one of the new Fate Worlds of Adventure. This one's called So the Story Goes. Our players are basically troubadours traveling the fictional Northlands. They're called storytellers, and they tell stories.
There's only two of us playing tonight, so we're troubadours. I hate you.
Well, there's about to be one of you, because Eric's about to die. So why don't you two introduce your characters?
You go first, Eric.
Okay. I'm Eric. And I'll be playing Gray Owl, or a lot of people call him Growl instead. It might seem just like a cute way to shorten it, but it also references his gravelly voice that he has. He is he's a puppeteer. He's an affable puppeteer. He's a nice guy. He makes puppets, obviously, because that's what puppeteers do. Are we reading, like our troubles are,
Might as well. It's just a one shot.
His trouble is I ain't never scared. If someone challenges him to do something, he needs to do it. It's just the way he is. He wears his mistakes. He's got a lot of scars from things that he's been challenged to do.
He's failed at.
Yeah, but some of them he succeeded, but you don't see those as much.
And, usually don't get scars from the good things.
Right. And voice of stone, heart of gold, because he's got that raspy old voice, but he's got a heart of gold. He could really see the good in pretty much everyone. He goes out and, like, tries to find the good in people, which is where his relationship to Ryan's character comes in. I could see the good in Ryan's character's heart. I'm not going to say what Ryan's character's name is, because that's for Ryan to say. I don't want to spoil it.
That's their name, Ryan's character.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I'm Ryan, and I'm playing Ryan's character.
Wait, could you come up with a shorter version? I don't want to be saying Ryan's character.
That's fine. Right. I'll just call her Cinder.
Okay.
So Ryan's character, now known as Cinder, she is a slight freckle-faced teenager with bright red hair and green eyes. She is a persnickety performer who has stage terror.
Not stage fright.
Not stage fright, stage terror.
No, you don't understand. Stage fright does not begin to describe what I go through.
Like, everything gets voided. Bowels, bladder, it's just not pretty.
Arteries.
Sinuses. She has stage terror because she used to be a pro at cons until that one time when an angry mob almost burned her at the stake.
Like what happened?
Which kind of soured her on the graft. So she joined up with Growl, and now she does the voices for all of his puppets.
His voice ain't so hot for it. Except for a select few.
Usually either monsters or monsters.
She keeps an eye out for Growl, basically. Her connection aspect is keep Growl's head out of the clouds, because he's a dreamer and she's the practical part of the partnership. And I kind of picture them. Well, Ryan and Tatum O'Neill from Paper Moon would be a little weird.
Which because, one would be Ryan?
That would be you. I kind of picture them.
I'm confused.
I kind of picture them having like a father-daughter relationship. In Paper Moon, they were both con artists. But if Tatum O'Neill was the con artist and Ryan O'Neill was like a sweet, good-natured, innocent person.
I've never seen that, so I don't understand that reference. But
I
sure.
I said because your name is Ryan. I forgot to physically describe myself.
So do it.
He's kind of a, like about 6 foot tall. He's got a little musculature to him, but not much. He's an older, he's in his 40s. There's a bit of gray in his beard. I picture him balding. And, he usually has a fairly friendly smile on.
Okay. So you guys, this adventure is called, The Fortress of Virtue. So you guys have been traveling the road for a while. You have packs on your back, horses. There are no horses in the Northlands. Oxen and cattle are the main domesticated work animal.
So I see more. You had to make me play a game where there are no horses.
Yes, I made you do it.
That's entirely why.
Yep. Yeah.
So occasionally there are carts, usually from merchants, maybe a well-off farmer, transporting goods between towns, an oxen pulled cart. But for the most part, people walk. And so that's how you go around from town to town. You have simple supplies with you.
And a burrow.
A burrow. And no. Usually when you get to town, people are happy to see storytellers, so you're provided for in exchange for telling stories, entertaining children, imparting wisdom. People will give you food and board and food and things like that. You never overstay your welcome. You know when it's time to go, but people are usually happy to see you. So today, you are heading towards a town called Eight Virtues, which sits beside the Flower River, a tributary of the Sleeping River. You have never been here before, but you have heard from travelers that it is home to some sort of spiritual retreat. So as you're approaching the city, the town, the terrain here is green and hilly, and the river curls back and forth among peaceful farms and forests, cutting a glittering ribbon through the hills. The path that you are traveling parallels the river, and along the way, you see, like I said, the carts and boats also on the river carrying food to sell at Eight Virtues. When you first see, you crest a hill, and the town of Eight Virtues is laid out beneath you. Not too far off in the distance. You see a dense crowd of wooden buildings, which could probably hold about 1,000 residents. The town is bounded on the north by the river, and on the south by an impressive 8-sided stone fortress. The walls of the fortress The walls of the fortress are new, but still under construction. They enclose an area about 100 meters across, and are between 10 and 15 meters high, depending on how far they are in their construction. And I will show you guys. This is a map of the town.
Ooh.
That's where you're heading.
Cool.
Coming into Eight Virtues.
Nice.
So the walls are still under construction.
Right. It's just there's not a wall around the whole town.
It's just that one area.
Yeah.
It's an
octagon. All right. So as you are walking, you see there are four people on the road heading towards you. Two of them are carrying spears and dragging the other two away from the town. Everyone on the road seems to get out of the way as they come by. The two who are being dragged are kicking up a cloud of dirt. The spear carriers have bright yellow sashes around their waists. Eight characters in the written language of the Northlands are embroidered in black on the sashes. Cinder, since you are literate, you could see that these are the symbols for generosity, temperance, humility, harmony, serenity, honesty, obedience, and silence.
All right, we got two of them.
The people that they are dragging are a man and woman that appear to be about 60 years old, dressed roughly and simply. They are begging and weeping with the two men who are dragging them. And you can see they each have fresh tattoos on their cheeks. Very fresh, less than an hour old. Cinder, you could see that each tattoo, it's the same tattoo on both of them, and it is the symbol for empty.
I like to go approach these people.
Two spear carriers dump the old couple in the dirt, and one of them turns to them and says, You are never to return to Eight Virtues. You are banished from the town. And then the two turn and start walking back.
Excuse me.
Is that to... Who is that to?
To the people, the two walking back.
Yes.
My goodness, what's been going on here? These two people, they look like pretty nice fellas. Is everything wrong? Is anything wrong? You seem to be a bit rough with them, and I, you know, everyone deserves a nice treatment here and there. So, what's the story, Morning Glory?
These two have violated the rules and customs of eight virtues, and the magistrates have ordered them to be exiled.
Oh, well, that seems a tad harsh to me. I know I ain't from your place here, but, you know, one infraction don't seem like something you just kick someone out for. I'm sure they're real sorry. They look real sad.
We don't know what they've done. Their crimes might have been very severe. What is it that they're accusing?
You're still talking to the spearman?
I'll bring the two into the conversation. I'll turn to them. What is it that you've been accused of?
We're only trying to find our son. He's been missing for 20 years. And the two spearmen say, it's not our job to judge them. We only enforce the laws and the rules of the magistrates. If you have a problem, you can take it up with them. They, looking at the older couple, are not welcome back in the town. And the two spearmen turn and start walking away again.
They don't seem like much of a fun sort, do they?
Please, the old man, he gets up and he helps the old woman, you probably assume his wife, up. And they're dusting themselves off. Please, you could help us. They'll let you back in. I'm Pebble. This is my wife, Raindrop. You have to help us, please.
Do you need a note card?
Yes.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'm just going to keep looking frantically around.
Poor Pebble and Raindrop. Because they're named Pebble and Raindrop.
Oh, I love to help you. I love helping people out. Especially so unfortunate you can't find your son. Of course. What, right in we got time to help them out, don't we?
Of course we do. Of course we do. Now listen. They seem to be overly concerned with the rules in this town. While there's nothing inherently wrong with looking for your son, what is it that they think that you've done?
Well, you see, our son Hop, about 20 years ago, he entered the sanctuary to study virtue. It was a great honor for him, but ever since then, we haven't heard anything about him. We've tried to write him letters, tried to speak to him. We haven't seen him. We haven't heard from him. We don't know if he's alive or dead.
Oh, you write him letters. Wow.
Oh, well, no, I'm sorry. They're illiterate.
I thought this is saying that they are literate people.
We've tried to speak to him. We've asked the magistrates for permission, but we've never seen him. We don't know if he's alive or dead. The magistrates, every time we've asked them for information about our son, they deny our requests. We've been asking for years, and they finally kicked us out. Yeah, I mean, it is against the tradition to ask about the people who enter the sanctuary to study, but we just wanted to see our son again.
They gotta understand, it's a family thing. You gotta see your son. Maybe if we try to talk.
And Raindrop says, even just to know he's alive.
Of course. Maybe we could try and talk to him, talk some compassion into those guys here.
Oh, please, that would be miraculous.
What do you think, Cinder? I want to make all the decisions myself.
Any town where they would tattoo something like that to your face and kick you out.
I mean,
just
it ain't so bad a tattoo, honestly. I ain't know that wasn't your choice there.
You know, you can see it's a fresh, like, black tattoo.
Yeah, but
it's still
I can't
bleeding
read it.
A little bit. No, you can't read it.
I don't even know it's to be read. It could look like a symbol.
Well, no, you recognize it as a symbol of a language. You just don't know what
it means. Oh, all right. Why? What does that mean? She's the one who could read of us too. I ain't so good with that.
I whisper to you, it means empty.
Oh. That's odd. I don't understand.
Wait, where did it go? It means we're empty of virtue.
No, well, that doesn't make sense to me. All you want to do is see your kid. I don't know. This town, I'm sure they got their reasons and all, but this town don't make no sense to me. We gonna talk to them?
Yes, I think we should put on a show for them.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Are you storytellers?
Oh, yeah, look.
I'll go into my bag, I'll pull out one of my puppets.
Oh, thank you. This is a miracle. Thank you.
I'll do like a little voice. Yeah. You know. Don't worry, we'll set everything right.
I have a bow.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
She does the voices. They don't always like to hear my voice. I don't know why.
There's a small caravansary that's about a few miles down the road. We'll go there until we find out what we're going to do, since we can't return to town. But you could find us there.
All right, we'll go see what we could do, and we'll come back and let you know. All right, you'll be safe over there.
Of course, thank you. The man like shakes both your hands. The woman gives you both a big hug, and then they take hands and start walking down the road.
Empty. Wow. They take these things real seriously over there.
Apparently so. Those two officers were wearing this yellow sashes had virtues embroidered on them.
Oh, is that what those said? Well, maybe we could talk some sense and make them see the virtue of family and caring for each other and whatnot. You know, that's important, really.
We ought to be careful about asking questions, too. Seems like they don't take kindly to that. Mm. And while getting a new tattoo isn't exactly getting tied to a stump and set on fire, it's not an experience I'm eager to have.
Yeah, I can see why you wouldn't want that. Even without your history, you wouldn't not want to get burned. It hurts. They told me, you growl, walk on those coals. And I said, well, what's in it for me? And they said, oh, we'll give you a shiny gold piece. He said, I had to do it. It was challenging my bravery and whatnot.
You tell me this story every time you take off your shoes, which is...
it's a good story!
Which is thankfully rare.
All right, so you guys, you're about a mile outside town at this point, so you keep walking. As you get closer to the town proper, both of you make listen checks. Or notice, actually.
Does it involve when watching someone's physical actions?
No.
Okay.
Oh,
zero.
Plus three.
Okay. So you both, you've been storytellers for a while now, at least a year. You've traveled to lots of different towns. There's always a general hubbub when you come into a town, especially if there's a market. There's people selling things, people talking in the streets, even if there's not. As you enter this town, Growl, it takes you a second to notice it, but Cinder, you notice it right away. It's quiet. It's uncomfortably quiet. There's people on the streets, they're walking around. You can see that that huge walled fortress structure in the center dominates the rest of the town. And any stalls for market seem to be set up in the vicinity of that, and you get the distinct impression that is like the town center in multiple ways.
Okay.
But as you walk towards the market, you can see there's people shopping and buy, like there's little farm stands set up. But like, all the people are like whispering to each other if they have to talk. Otherwise, they just don't talk at all.
Mm-hmm.
People like you watch, you see, two men bump into each other as they're walking, and they both just kind of turn and like bow their heads in apology to each other, and keep walking. You see that there are more of those men and women with those gold sashes around their waists patrolling in a way. Some of them are just kind of standing guard. You get the very you easily get the sense that these are the guards of the town, the police force of some kind or another. But it's very odd how just quiet everything is. Like you could hear, it sounds like you're inside a church, but it's town square.
Polite, they polite.
Apparently, silence is one of the virtues.
It is.
Well, that don't make.
It was on the sash.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That don't make much sense to me.
Do you want me to reread them to you?
Yeah, would you?
Generosity.
Hang on. Okay.
Temperance. Okay. Humility.
Mm-hmm.
Harmony. Serenity.
Serenity now.
Honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Obedience. And silence.
Honesty. Laughter. Generosity. Kindness.
Go planet!
And magic. Elements of harmony.
So I like lean over to growl and I start whispering, those sashes each say generosity, temperance, humility, harmony, serenity, honesty, obedience, and silence. I guess those must be the eight virtues.
Well, some of those sound pretty good, but
you see a woman walking on the side of the street. She's got like a big basket full of like of fruits and vegetables. She's got two little kids with her, a boy and a girl. And they're both just walking quietly, like right in front of their mother. They're not running around and playing. And they're young. They're like right. Maybe 5 or 6. They're just quiet, with their heads like down a little bit, walking in front of their mother.
Cinder watches this, you know, like kind of horror struck, like she's watching an automaton mimic a human. Something's not right about this.
I ain't never seen kids so quiet before. I mean, quiet. That's weird. It's weird to me. I don't do quiet. You might have noticed, but I'm a bit of a talker.
As the woman walks by you, she just kind of like smiles and bows her head. And keeps going with her kids.
Trying to figure out if he already heard about silence. I was thinking if he would just go and like say hello like boisterously or whatnot.
You can do whatever you want.
No, but he's already, he's not stupid. He's just
okay. So what do you guys want to do?
Well, we said that we would go and try to see about talking to find their son. But will we go straight there, or?
I think, well, we know that there's magistrates.
Right.
The most predominant sound you can hear is the work that's being done on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
But with your notice check, Ryan, you realize that the sound is all the sounds of, like, the stones being put in place. The workers themselves, like, aren't talking.
Everyone's
just quiet. I mean, every once in a while they'll say something if they have to, but yeah. there's no chit chat. There's no singing. There's no music or anything. It's just quiet. And then you hear like a grinding on stone as the blocks are like shifted into place. And instead of say, like calling out like move, you look up and you see one of them is like waving and then like stop and like just puts up his hands.
Alright, so I suppose we should probably talk to one of the guards and get an audience with the magistrate, and I'm sure that there's got to be some kind of a dispensation or maybe a permit that we can get.
Oh, sure. Let's go do that. Maybe we can soften their hearts over this whole thing or something or whatnot.
I think we should also maybe scope the place out a little, because This is...
You feeling uncomfortable too?
Yeah, very.
Yeah, good. I thought it was just the food I ate before, but I'm glad it's both of us.
Oh God.
Okay. So I'm gonna.
You're not Cassie, are you? I think that might get us killed.
Let me just double check. Is it the
monkey stuff? I swear to God, if we end up with tattoos on our faces because you farted,
maybe they'll be nice tattoos.
They're not gonna be nice tattoos.
There we go. Okay.
There's just a little cloud with the waft lines over it.
So, you guys are approaching. I'm gonna say you guys came in along the road
from the river.
River
road. Yeah.
So you're coming in. You're coming towards. If you just follow the road, you'll come to that north gate of the sanctuary there.
Okay.
So you could see that gate as you. So you're heading towards the sanctuary.
Yeah.
All right. So you can see that gate is flanked by four of the wardens, two on each side with the yellow sashes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a large, impressive door, but it's a person-sized door. So okay. It's like a double. It's like cathedral door-esque.
All right.
And it is closed.
Nobody's. So yeah, no one's going in or out. Nope. It's okay.
And they're just standing, like, two on each side of the door with their spears.
So, you know, maybe we should talk to one of the merchants first. Get the lay of the land, because merchants trade with other people. They might not be from here.
Yeah, and they probably don't got those big spears they have over there.
They can give us an outsider's perspective. All right, so, yeah, we're going to go back over to the market.
Okay.
I'll find someone who's selling food.
Okay. Yeah. There's a like cooked food or like farm produce.
Cooked food. We've been traveling. We just hit town. We need something to eat.
Mm-hmm. So there's one person who has a grill, and they're cooking. It looks like corn and some kind of meat on a stick. You can't tell just by looking at it.
It's generic meat.
It's meat. It's on a stick.
Yeah. The primary food.
You walk up and they just smile and nod and sort of like gesture to the grill. You get the sense that most people just kind of point at what they want.
I will point to the generic meat,
mm-hmm.
and point to the corn and hold up two fingers and point to him.
Okay. He's the man smiles. He he's got tongs and he like flips things over one more time. And he grabs a piece of paper from his cart and loads puts two meats in it, wraps it up, hands it to you. And takes two corns, wraps them up, hands it to you. So the currency of the Northlands are small cut stones shaped into cubes. And the size and type of stone determines how valuable it is.
Okay.
So,
I should have asked first. Do we have money?
Yeah, you have a little bit of money. You're not like well off, but you have enough to
afford like two food. Pieces of meat and
yes.
corn.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm literate, but I'm also destitute.
You're lit.
Oh, there's a different... Okay. I don't know what the basic number...
78,000.
Four copper. Whatever.
Four copper cubes.
Yeah.
All right, so I will...
I'm glad it wasn't 78,000. Thank you.
Yeah. So you... you hand it over. He looks at it real quick and then smiles and nods in a very, like, thank you.
And I will gesture for him to come closer and...
Yeah, he leans over.
Excuse me for disturbing the silence, my friend. My companion and I are new in town. Are you local, or are you passing through?
No, I'm from around these parts. Were you hoping for someone local, or?
Honestly, like I was good with either like a merchant, you know, someone who would have like a bit of an outsider's perspective, might be able to say, oh well, you know, I come here to trade every day, but I'm not actually from here.
Just roll plus nothing.
Okay,
let's see, it's like a luck roll.
I got plus one.
Okay, yeah. So
I got four minuses. He has a heart attack.
He explodes. The man says, "Oh no, I'm from
certainly not eating that meat."
I'm from the neighboring town Willowleaf, but I come here.
Oh, Willowleaf! It's a wonderful town.
Thank you. I come here sometimes to trade on market days.
My companion and I are storytellers, and we were hoping to get a chance to present a scene, a play for the town. I've heard that there is a council of magistrates. How might we get an audience without offending? It seems like I glance over at the guards with the yellow sashes. It seems like they are sticklers.
To be honest. The magistrates do not often come out. Once a week, one of them, I don't know which one, comes out right over here, points to the door that you were just at before, for services. This town uses a 9-day week. So every ninth day.
Like that, the dollar store near here.
Yep. Open 9 days a week. Well, no, on this place, the ninth day is for rest.
Wow.
So they're only open 8 days a week.
Damn. Like the Beatles.
Yep. Every ninth day he comes out and gives sermons.
Oh, is the same magistrate?
I believe so. Sermon days aren't market days, so sometimes I've stuck around when I'm cleaning up. Tomorrow's a sermon day, so I might be here in the morning, but usually I'm gone by then. But from what I understand, that would be the best time, after, of course, to try to talk to them. I can't guarantee they'll hear you.
Are they going to get angry at us talking? I mean, it doesn't seem like anyone else is talking.
It's not that you can't talk. It's just most people avoid it. Silence is one of the virtues of eight virtues. And,
yeah, that's what she told me. I can't read it so good.
But yeah, if you make too much noise, the wardens will come and discipline you. So most people just try to avoid that.
Yep, that sounds terrible.
Don't make no sense to me. I'm a talker, you might not notice.
I did. This must be very hard for you.
Oh, absolutely.
But that's how they work here. I mean, if you're looking for someone with a more local spin, you might want to try the Starry Sky. It's a tea house. The couple that owns it have been here as long as I know.
Thank you, friend. Thank you for the...
Also, if you're looking for a place to perform, that might be a shot.
It's a good tea, I would imagine.
It's delicious.
Wonderful. It's a doubleheader.
I will throw him an extra copper cube for the information.
Thank you very much.
I bow my head, and generosity is a virtue.
he smiles and like winks at you.
I bow my head too, and then pull out the same puppet I had before and have it bow as well.
he chuckles a little. Well, I hope I'm around for your show. Maybe you could come to Willowleaf next. We would love to have storytellers there.
Oh, that sounds delightful. Once our business is done here, I'm sure we could.
We'll add it to the tour.
All right.
Well, thank you. Okay. So that's that. That's what he tells you.
Okay.
Mm.
All right, so I guess we should probably head over to the Starry Sky. I'm not eager to talk to any of those wardens.
Oh, no, no. I'm sure they're good folk at heart, but, you know, they got an unpleasant job to do, I don't want them doing that unpleasant job on us.
Yeah, I don't want not any part of a discipline that involves tattooing.
Mm. I mean, I got plenty of marks on me already. Well, I don't know. If it looks good... No. We'll worry about that another time.
All right, so I will... I will grab him by the ear. And just like... And then point over in the direction that the...
Yeah, he showed you. As you look over, you could see a few hundred feet away, there's a two-story building, which sort of... stands out amongst all the smaller structures, and when he points, he said that was the Starry Sky.
I like to make people happy, so while we're heading over there, I'm going to have like a kind of bouncy walk. I'm going to keep that puppet out and have it like mimic my walk and mirror as we're going. Just to make people smile as we're going.
Make a notice check.
Zero. Exact same thing Rose ran those check before.
Well, no, it was just you see a few people smile.
Okay.
But as you're walking with the puppet, and you're concentrating more on that than looking around to see how people are taking it. Mm-hmm. So you can make a notice check too if you want, yeah.
All right. Let's see how this goes. Plus two.
So what does your puppet look like?
I pictured this one in like a... green hat with a feather sticking out of it.
Okay.
It's I guess the first thing that came to mind was like a Robin Hood looking puppet.
Okay.
Roll
plus nothing as like a luck check.
One.
Okay. So you're lucky in that it does not bear a resemblance to any of the people in power here.
Good.
So as you're walking, Cinder, so Cinder, you Growl is making his little puppet walk with him, in step, and you see you get a few mostly curious glances, a few smiles, a few people tap each other and point at you two as you come by. You do have that look of storytellers to you. A little dirty from the road, a little travel worn, your packs, on your back, your clothes simple, and the puppet, kind of gives it away too. You get some people have noticed that you're here in town. So you head to the Starry Sky. As I said, it's a simple two-story building. There's a little sign hanging above the door that says the Starry Sky. When you enter...
I don't know what says that, so I'm not sure we're in the right place.
Oh, that's true. It's a pictogram language, so it wouldn't say that.
Before we move on into the next scene, mm-hmm. Do you want to try to create, like, an aspect on the citizenry based on... like anticipation of a show. Like.
Ooh, I like that because now they're seeing my puppet out there.
So,
I was just thinking that might be a good idea. Like, we can, if the wardens say no, we can always like rile up the popular sentiment. Like, that's sweet.
I'm gonna say. Actually, let me grab this. No, I don't remember what the 8 skills are.
The 8 skills are appeal, confront, listen, notice, rhetoric, risk, trick, and will.
Let me say appeal.
For me?
Yeah, because you're trying to evoke an emotional response from these people anticipating your show.
I'm rolling the exact same thing over and over. This time it ends up a 1 because there's a plus 2 for appeal.
Okay. So 1. So there's some... well, not hubbub, because that would be noise.
Blank plus minus minus.
But if it comes to the wardens trying to stop you from performing, you might be able to get some kind of bonus from the populace wanting to see the show.
Okay.
So we get a boost. So it's like
it's not an aspect. It was just a plus one.
Okay.
So you get a plus one boost.
Okay.
If for that specific thing, like if
okay.
If the man tries to put you down, you.
So in Fate Core, I think a boost is what we want. It doesn't create a permanent aspect with a free invoke. It's just a one off and then it goes away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So you do that.
So what do we want to call that? Just so we remember we have it.
On with the show.
Okay.
Okay. It's just a plus one boost, though.
Right.
All right, so you get to the starry sky. It doesn't actually say the starry sky, but the sign above it is
picture
a carving.
Of stars and a picture of sky?
I was going to say, yeah, stars and clouds sort of make it. It's like a painting of a night sky. So you get it. That's the starry sky.
Oh, this is the starry sky. All right. I like what they did with the stars in the sky. It really, really invokes the meaning of starry sky.
So you walk in, and it's warmer in here. There's a fire going in the hearth. And there's a little more noise. It's not loud. Like, you guys have been to inns before that are, like, loud and boisterous. Yeah. It's not that, but you could tell as soon as you walk in, it's a little more relaxed in here.
Okay.
People are chatting quietly, but they're talking. They're not just, like, pointing at things and gesturing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. As you walk in, you see,
it's a speakeasy.
No. So it's a lot of tables set out. Most of them are like park bench size. You can maybe sit like two or three adults on each side. There's a small counter set in the corner. Behind it is a large stove. There's a whole bunch of teapots like off to the side and water waiting to go. And there is a large, heavyset man behind the counter there. He is balding, but he's got ruddy cheeks and a smile, and he smiles at you as you two enter. Ah, welcome. Welcome to the starry sky. My name's Cookpot, and welcome to my tea house.
Oh, hello. Hello. It's nice to... You got a very nice establishment here. I'm Gray Owl. You could call me Growl because I got the voice thing going on. A lot of people do that. This is my compatriot over here. This is Cinder.
Hello.
Well, very nice to meet you. And what can I get for you two today? We have tea, and we have dumplings, which are very good, but I'm a little biased. I make them myself.
Sure, you do some nice work. I'd love to try a dumpling or two. Although... It isn't the principal reason we came here. We do have some talk we want to do, but I'm sure we could talk over food and then drink.
As I always say, business before tea is a mistake. Children, you see two little girls come running in. Could you sit these nice folks while I get their tea ready? And they say, yes, Papa. And
I still have my puppet out. I haven't put it away.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
They see... Is that your puppy?
Oh, yes, yes. This is Bilbo. Bilbo right over here.
Bilbo?
Yeah.
they both, like crouch down to look at it.
I make it put his hands up to his face as if startled that he's gotten some attention, and then do a meek little wave.
They giggle and wave back to him. Hi, Bilbo. Cookpot says, girls, please. Okay, this way. And they get up. They look maybe like 8 or 9. They lead you to one of the tables. You sit down. They run and they come back with trivets that they set on the table for the teapot that comes. And they come back with cups and plates, and they set it down.
Cups?
And then...
Ryan's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then you hear the whistling of a tea kettle.
And the wardens come in and arrest the tea kettle.
Yep.
No, they beat it up and then tattoo it.
Hurl it out of the city limits.
They tattoo it with MD and then they just turn it over and dump all the water out.
Is it? Oh, now it is.
And then you see Cookpot comes over after you hear the kettle boil. A minute later, he comes over. He's got a teapot in one hand, and he's got a plate of dumplings in his other hand. And he sets it. He pours. He puts the dumplings down. They're not like Chinese style dumplings. They're like English style dumplings. Mm-hmm. So they're a little thicker and more sandwichy.
Uh-huh, okay.
But they're still like hand pockets. Size
okay.
things.
Take a sip of the tea.
Yeah, so there's two on each on the plate for each of you.
Oh, this must be oolong because it's been a long time since I had such good tea.
Well, thank you. He pours the tea. And he sits down with you. Well, thank you. I'll have to tell my husband Empty Pockets. He actually runs the farm where we grow it. We grow it ourselves, dry it, and then serve it here.
It's delicious. Got the homegrown flavor.
It's got quite the aroma.
Yes. Well, it's about as fresh as tea can get. So, what brings you to Eight Virtues? He gets up. He doesn't take any from your tea. He goes up, and there's another pot on the stove, just like off to the corner. Mm-hmm. It's a fire stove, so it's like off to the corner, keeping warm. And he grabs. You can see he like reaches under the counter and pulls out an old mug that's just stained on the inside with tea, and pours himself from that pot, a glass, a mug, and then comes down with you.
Well, as you may have guessed, my associate and I are storytellers. We seek to spread the stories of the past far and wide, and we were wondering if anyone in town might be interested in a performance.
You see the girls, they're like sitting one table away, just kind of like staring at you, because they know, I mean, they help their dad out here, so like, they know they're not supposed to bother customers, but you guys are storytellers, so it's like a big deal. So as soon as you say that, they're like, oh, Daddy, are they going to do a show? Can they do a show? Are they going to do a show here?
We got two fans already, see?
Cook Pot chuckles and turns around and is like, girls, why don't you go outside and see if you can help your dad and your brother with the tea? And like, oh, but come on, we don't want you. He's like, girls, fine. But they get up to leave. One of them comes up to you. You still have the puppet out?
Oh, yeah, he's so, next to me.
So they don't come up to... She doesn't come up to you. She comes up to Bilbo and says, you better say goodbye to me before you leave.
I have him turn to look at her, and he gives, like, a little salute and a hands motion that would be a thumbs up if I could make a puppet.
I say in my ventriloquist voice, my child, I would not dream of leaving without saying goodbye.
She like gasps and then runs out. Tree leaf, you will. So they go running out the back door, and Cookbox sighs. Sorry about that.
Oh, it's quite all right. They seem like lovely kids.
Yes, they are. Though to be honest, I'd be lost without Empty Pockets. My wife, or my first wife. Wait. That's weird. Huh? So it says Empty Pockets is he.
Right.
But then it says that Cookpot's first wife.
What? Well, maybe he could have been married to a woman before.
Yeah, that's true.
But then...
That's true. So Empty Pockets would be his third spouse, I guess. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Well, no, Empty Pockets is a man.
Right.
But it makes it sound like Cookpot has had another wife. Because if you have a first wife...
Yeah. Right, yeah, but they could be referring to maybe a first spouse, and then they just say his wife because it was a wife. And,
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Either way.
Doesn't matter. Either way, he says, my wife, Treetop, entered the sanctuary somewhat unexpectedly, and, left the children to me.
Entered the sanctuary?
As a penitent. What am I saying? You're not
so you're
worn
around
here,
your
you?
Neck.
No, that's a pendant, my friend.
Right.
He grabs your teapot and refills your cup. You see, I'm sure you've noticed that the sanctuary is sort of the center of town here at Eight Virtues. Do you know the story behind it?
We would love to hear it.
We are attuned to stories. We do like stories.
Perhaps we could add it to the repertoire.
Mm. Well, this is a good one.
We're already working out.
So, before the war, and you know when he says the war, he means everything that happened with the tyrants. Before the war, Eight Virtues was known as Redstone, because there's a quarry to the south where they mine red sandstone.
That's a good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very literal, these people.
Yeah, and you know the walls around the sanctuary are red sandstone, so that it makes more sense. Mm-hmm. Now, the town's leaders at the time were sympathetic to the tyrant, and they took swift and harsh action against anyone who opposed her. One of those opponents was a woman named Dutiful. She may have been a storyteller. No one's really sure about that. But she never believed any of the tyrant's propaganda. And she expressed her dissent of the warlord to anyone who would listen. She was passionate, and she was persuasive, and eventually, other people in Redstone agreed with her.
That's really all I asked.
I'm sorry, what?
I was just asking if she was beautiful, because it was rhyme with the name, you know?
Beautiful, too. I don't actually know.
Oh, well, I hope so. It will really work out.
So, once Dutiful started gathering a following of opposition to the tyrants, the town's leaders decided to take action because they knew the tyrants would not be merciful to anyone who plotted against her. So they arrested Dutiful and her comrades and lowered her and all of them into a deep pit without food or water. And they told her that they would only free her if she swore to end her troublemaking. They covered the pits with a heavy stone. It was pitch black. Now, immediately after they did this, a rebel army approached Redstone, just as the tyrant's forces came to defend it. Townspeople fled, and the soldiers fought a battle here for weeks. When the rebels won, and they drove off the tyrant's forces, they came into what was now the sanctuary, and threw open the prison, which had been ignored during the battle for weeks, mind you, weeks. What they saw is that Dutiful's comrades had all died, but that she was alive and healthy down in this deep, dark pit where she had been for weeks. She told them that her perfect isolation had forced her to face her own weaknesses. She had realized that, although she had worked to resist the tyrant's oppression, she was always doomed to fail because of the anger, jealousy, and vanity in her own heart. She could not build a virtuous world until she had mastered virtue within herself. And she saw clearly the 8 virtues that would create perfect harmony in a community. The virtues that the wardens wear on their belts.
Generosity, temperance, humility, harmony, serenity, honesty, obedience, silence.
She can read.
I can.
You got it. So, Dutiful said that the power of this vision allowed her to cast off her material concern and survive for weeks without food or water. Now, after telling this story to the astonished rebel soldiers, Dutiful ascended to a state of pure joy and vanished, leaving behind nothing but a beautiful fragrance that was carried off by the wind. And the rebels, inspired by the miracle they just saw, rebuilt the town's prison as a spiritual retreat where seekers of virtue could follow Dutiful's path and achieve enlightenment. The caretakers chose titles to preserve the memory of Dutiful's ordeals as a prisoner. The caretakers became magistrates, and those who served them became wardens. And there are people who enter the sanctuary to study are known as penitents. And then they renamed the town 8 Virtues.
How are the penitents chosen? Do they choose to go in themselves? Or are they forced? Or are they...
Well, no. It's voluntary.
Okay.
There are only 40 penitents allowed at a time. They all live inside the sanctuary. And they never leave. They serve the wardens and the magistrates, doing whatever it is they need, and eventually, when they've achieved whatever it is that they achieve, they're selected to ascend, they probably do. I mean, no one really knows what happens inside, except for, you know, the magistrates and the penitents. But every so often, a new spot opens up, and the magistrates choose someone to fill it. Some hopefuls sign up to be wardens, figuring that that will give them a leg up. Some people just get lucky. My wife, she was a treetop, just entered with a penitent without any warning.
Wait, so you said they choose from the people for who want to be the penitents, and she just suddenly got in without even, like, making any hubbub?
Well, I mean, it's... Oh, Jimmy. It's possible that she had been petitioning them without telling me. But she... I mean, obviously, she had always spoken about the sanctuary with admiration, but I never thought that she would just up and leave me, and especially the children, like that.
I'm so sorry. That must have been difficult.
It was, but, empty pockets, helped when she left, and he's been helping me ever since. No, I've talked your ear off enough. How are the dumplings, though?
Delicious.
Oh, delightful.
I told you. Best in town. Only in town, but the best.
Makes for not so stiff competition, but I'm sure if there was competition, these would win.
Well, they know they shouldn't even bother, because...
Oh, I like the way you... Yeah, absolutely.
So are you going to perform?
We would like to.
That's the plan.
We were a little concerned about the wardens not taking too kindly to it. Our performances do tend to get a bit boisterous.
And they seem on the gruff side, to be honest. I'm sure they've been through a lot, but...
I wouldn't just... If I were you, I mean, I wouldn't just set up with no warning and just start performing. That would not go over well. Tomorrow is a day of rest, and the warden, the high warden, actually, have you never called high warden? He's the one, not warden, I'm sorry, magistrate.
The magistrate comes out to do a sermon.
The head magistrate, I believe, is he the one that does the... One of the magistrates named Belle, she does the sermons on rest days. There's five magistrates. Oh, it's just B-E-L-L.
Oh, okay.
So she's the one who'll be here tomorrow.
Well, they're all in the sanctuary.
Right, but she's the one who'll be doing the sermon there tomorrow.
Exactly.
So if we wanted to perform, we should probably talk to her, or should we mention it to the wardens? What do you think?
I would try talking to her. It might be difficult. I mean, that's the main time that anyone in town gets to see the magistrates, so... You won't be the only one trying to petition her. I might be able to help you out.
Well, how so? How would that be? Because we'd be very grateful.
Let's just say that I know people in town. Everyone comes to the Starry Night.
Tina's fine, I can see why.
Well, did I make the joke about the oolong yet?
Yes, you did. It's been so long since you've had some.
Right.
Can I use that one?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Thank you.
We might use your story here, so you can use my joke, of course.
Seems like an equitable trade. But, so Belle does it. If she gives you permission, then of course you'll be fine, unless Wide Awake, the head magistrate, says otherwise. Do you know what you would perform? She might want to know that. Make sure it's nothing blasphemous.
Well, we would have to discuss that. Our usual repertoire might not go over quite so well.
I sometimes put this one puppet in a shouting contest with the other one, and they wouldn't like that at all. Not at all. That's just one of the shows.
I mean, if you do something that's in deference to... I forgot her name already.
Wide Awake?
No.
Dutiful?
Dutiful. If you were to do a puppet performance of Dutiful Story, well, they would love that. That you would almost guaranteed be able to do. Anything else? I mean, some of the popular fables, you know, with a good, strong moral lesson would be fine. Anything that's questioning, you both can make a listen check.
Okay.
If I roll blank, plus and two minuses again. Nope, just two minuses. Negative one.
I got a plus three.
All right. I'm rolling terribly.
So, Growl, you're already thinking about puppets in your head.
You're often thinking about puppets.
Okay, so what am I going to do for Dutiful? She's got to be beautiful, but she's got to be strong. You got to figure out a way that you can capture this essence.
You also have to figure out a way to make her seem like she survived for weeks in a black pit.
Cinder, you get the sense from Cookpots that he's holding back. Not that he's lying to you. You know, everything he told you is true. But when you're talking about
doing a performance,
like not doing a performance, but the kinds of performances you can do.
Okay,
he kind of gets like this little like scowl on his face, like. Well, you know, if you do any, like, basically, you know, if you do anything too raucous, they're not going to like it. And you get the sense that he doesn't like that fact that that you know that your performance would be so controlled.
Oh, and I'll make it have a nice flowing dress, but I won't put any legs under it because you're not going to see the legs. And then when she's going to
disappear... Remember, these are like 2D puppets too.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right. I forgot that too. We're shadow puppets.
They're not necessarily shadow puppets, but I mean, you could change it to marionettes if you want. Right. That's fine.
What I was thinking the whole time.
Right. Well, the other thing is that, I mean, marionettes would be a lot harder to transport if they're like three-dimensional puppets.
Right.
Maybe he's got a big pack.
Maybe.
I was thinking.
The other thing you could do is that you might have like four puppet bodies and maybe you just like carve new heads and like you...
Oh, yeah.
Swap them out. So. Yeah.
Okay.
You have a little trunk of puppet costumes and heads and
I think the idea was that like they would be jointed,
right,
but like two dimensional. Ah. So like they'd have two legs that would walk, but it would be like a two dimensional thing. But it's up to you. I mean, if you want to do like three dimensional puppets, that's fine. If you want to just change it to that. Sorry.
I was kind of picturing marionettes.
Yeah, that's fine. So it's a marionette show.
Okay. I just want to be clear. The thing that I am getting the sense that he's leaving out is that he wants us to be able to do whatever we want.
Yeah, you get the sense that he doesn't exactly like the status quo.
Right. He wouldn't be opposed to us upsetting the apple cart a bit.
No, he wouldn't. Depending where those apples fell.
Okay.
In my mouth. I like apples. Not whole, though. Applesauce. What were you talking about?
And the penitents are never allowed out, and none of them have ever come out?
No. No, they're not. If you want to try to persuade him to talk more, it depends how you want to do that. You could definitely do appeal, if you want to, like, appeal to the memory of his wife.
I'll try that. I mean, even the most devoted person, you know, leaving everything they know behind for a life of prayer and reflection, that must take an enormous effort of will.
Does it take a lot of effort for me?
No matter what, if there's a game where a status calls will, this is going to happen.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because it's pretty common.
Yeah. All right. So that would be plus one. I'm gonna invoke a pro at cons because I'm pretty good at sweet talking people.
Okay. Let's talk about. All right. He scowls again.
So that brings. Sorry. Plus three.
Plus three. Yeah. So he scowls. Well, it's not all just meditation and study. I mean, they do that, but they're basically workhorses for the magistrates. They work all day from sunup to sundown. They barely get any sleep and nothing to eat. They tend to work until they drop, which is considered a good thing, because the ill get admitted into the Hall of Judgment quickly, which is the final step on their voyage.
When they ascend and vanish into a pleasant scent.
If that's what you believe, yeah. The only people who know what goes on in the Hall of Judgment are the magistrates. And obviously a few of the penitents. And the head warden. See, the magistrates, they live very well. They get the best of everything. And the penitents serve them basically like slaves.
That sounds awful.
Well, they sign up for it. Let me get you a refill.
I wonder why.
He grabs your teapot and gets up and walks over to... He walks back to the little like cooking area. And you see he puts a pot of water back on, and he like takes a deep breath and lets it out while he stands at the boil. And he fills up your teapot and comes back and sets it down with a fresh pot. Mm-hmm. So, performance, puppet show.
Right. Yeah, we're gonna... So, what do you think, Cinder? Should we do the story of Dutiful over there? Or you think that... I think that would go over well. Obviously, since they care for us so much and everything. And whatnot.
I decide, and whatnot is the thing he says a lot, but then I keep forgetting that I decided that.
At the risk of being... blasphemous. I feel like the magistrates have taken the meaning of Dutiful's story and skewed it somewhat. Maybe we should remind the townspeople what the story is truly about.
Cookpot grins. Well, like I said, the story of Dutiful would definitely be approved by the magistrates.
So we tell them that
you hear a bang from the back as a back door opens, and you hear a bunch of feet walking in.
Oh no, just feet?
Yeah, just feet. And you see the two girls and a boy who looks a little bit younger come running in, and the boy goes, "I want to meet the pup. I want to meet Bilbo. I want to meet Bilbo." And standing behind them is a tall man.
I do my voice again, and like we just perfectly synchronize this.
Yeah.
I want to meet that kid. I want to meet that kid.
Pointing.
He's
energetically.
So behind them is a tall man with square shoulders and a thick brow. Makes it look like he's just kind of looming over the room. Mm-hmm. He's dirty. His hands are filthy and covered in dirt. He's smiling. He's like, "Well, the children said that there was a puppet in here named Bilbo who was talking to them. I didn't quite know what they meant, but... I think I get it now." Cookpot gets up and says, "Yes, honey, storytellers have come to Eight Virtues." "Oh, well. Interesting.
I take it that this is your husband here, right?
Empty Pockets.
Empty Pockets. Your husband here talks very nicely about you. He's very fond."
"Oh, he definitely talks." And he kind of like... You get like frowns, but in like a loving,
right,
patronizing kind of way.
I must say, you grow a mighty flavorful leaf.
"Well, thank you."
"Oh, I'd say this one to him. It must be oolong tea, because it's been so long since I had some of that's good." See, everyone likes it. Everyone likes the jokes.
And Crockpot says, Wow, he usually doesn't laugh like that.
I was laughing because you called him Crockpot.
I did?
Yeah, you did.
Cookpot, whatever. And Cookpot says, you know, we were just talking about a show these two might do. Something about, maybe about, you know, I told them about Dutiful's story, and they think that it might be good to sort of remind the town and the magistrates about the true meaning of Dutiful's story. And Empty Pockets kind of, like, furrows his brow and then, like, raises his eyes a bit, and he's like, oh, well, that would most certainly be interesting.
Yeah, we think we could do a real good job with it. It'd make everyone understand, you know? Understand what it means, how you get it across and everything.
Good story is all in the telling.
Indeed. Well, before anything, I need to go wash up. He holds up his filthy hands from working in the field for hours. It's probably like noon-ish now. Cookpot says, "All right, I'll put some food on. You two are staying with us for lunch."
Of course, that sounds good to you, Cinder. We can't turn down hospitality. You can't turn down generosity, and that's one of the things. This is one of those virtues.
the kids like come up to you. Could you do a puppet show? And Cookpot says, "Kids, now, no, come on, they're guests. Leave them alone." It's up to you guys. Like, you wouldn't have to roll. It would just be like,
right. Yeah. No, I think we should totally do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Show.
Okay.
Well, I go, well, I don't know. Bilbo wasn't invited to lunch.
Oh,
he puts
hey, Daddy Crockpot, can Bilbo come to lunch?
Back in the bag, Bilbo.
Daddy Cookpot, can Bilbo come to lunch? They're all like, please.
Sorry, Bilbo.
And he's, yes, of course, Bilbo can come to lunch.
Oh, okay, Bilbo, you get to eat.
Does Bilbo have any friends that he'd like to bring?
Of course he does. Don't worry, they don't eat much.
All right, so you two...
come on out, guys!
Full 70... I figure you... I like what you said, that having, like, four of them, but with interchange...
I feel like a few bodies, and you make the heads for whatever,
right.
You know.
I figure they already currently have a head on them each,
yeah.
Otherwise, because I'm not just going to pull three heads of puppets.
Why did you make their necks so bloody?
That's glue.
Some of the stories are a little intense.
We tell a lot of stories about atrocities.
So while
a little story of Behead and Betty and all the friends, you know.
So while Cookpot's making lunch, you just put on a little puppet show for the kids. You basically just like take the table and. I would assume you have some sort of like set to go behind, or you probably make it too. But you just do them on the table.
Yeah,
they love it.
Yay!
So you see, there are people who come in. It's ooh, Jimmy. It's warmer in here, but the people still they eat quickly. They drink their tea. Mm. They might have hushed conversations with each other, and then they leave. Mm-hmm. You guys are definitely like making a scene in the place. But Cookpot and Empty Pockets don't seem to care. In fact, they like it. And it's not like you're not getting the people who do come in while you're doing the show.
Uh-huh.
Watch it. Like you see, there's two guys sitting at a table eating their dumplings. Watch it, and one of them is like turned around in his seat watching you. And when you make a joke, he chuckles. And his friend gets up. And is like puts his hand on his hip, is like scowling at him,
mm-hmm.
and then like smacks him on the shoulder, and he's like, you know, let's go, we have work. And,
you know, make sure one of the puppets waves to him, to them as they leave.
That guy like waves back real quick, darts out the door. So how big are your puppets?
I pictured them maybe like.
Because I'm thinking, like, if you're doing a show for people, like they can't be like little 6-inch marionettes because no one will be able to see.
Right. My initial thought was like. A foot tall, but maybe they could be a little taller.
Okay, no, that makes sense.
About 18 inches.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so you eat lunch. Is there anything you'd like to do?
Well, maybe we should confer. I feel like I feel like I'm going to be skulking around town, like, listening a bunch to get the sense of, I mean, if I listen, I'm not going to hear much, but I do want to people watch and get the sense of, like, are these people happy? Are they, genuinely...
Well, listening is also, like, understanding.
Yeah, I know.
We also need to make sure we have an agreement of exactly what we're doing with the show, as...
Right.
Growl has picked up a little bit on the fact that we're not exactly doing the story of Dutiful the same way we've been told it, but he needs to know exactly what's going on.
Well, I would say also, even if you went to the magistrate tomorrow and said, we want to do this show, and they're like, sure, it's not going to happen tomorrow.
Right.
You would have time to...
to plan it out.
Mm-hmm. But also, you're professionals, so I would say it wouldn't take you more than a day to, get everything right. This is what you do. You know what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. So they've kind of offered us a place to stay. I'm sorry, we're...
They haven't brought it up.
Okay.
Yeah, we were just there for lunch.
Is there an inn nearby, or...
You don't know. You've never been here before.
Okay. In that case, I guess in a moment like after the show where we're kind of just like sitting around, maybe we've let the kids play with one of the puppets so they're all entertained and Cookpot and his husband are cleaning up or whatever. The two of us are alone. I'll be like, so what's our angle here?
I don't know. I mean, you made it sound like we ain't exactly doing the regular story, right?
Well, obviously we can't embellish, but we can certainly remind them that the purpose of the ascension of Dutiful was... the purpose of the creation of this sanctuary was not to elevate the magistrates into a fine lifestyle, but to allow people to pursue an ascetic lifestyle, to let them focus on their spirituality and the journey inward, if you believe that sort of thing.
So maybe we could add something at the end, I know we're not supposed to embellish, but maybe we can add something at the end after Dutiful ascends and have everyone, all the puppets, everyone hanging out as equals, no one jumping above, like you said, no magistrates being all self-important and everything. Everyone, show everyone equal, right? You're the smart one here.
That could work. We also want to find out what actually is happening,
right,
in the Hall of Judgment. Those poor people, Pebble and Raindrop, haven't seen their son in 20 years, and they've been asking, is he alive? Is he dead? Who knows?
Yeah, but I don't know what part of a story could make him give us that kind of information or let us see what's going on there or what. Or whatnot.
I caught it this time.
I think we're going to have to do a little bit of recon. Perhaps if we could find out something about the magistrates, we could make them see the injustice of their actions, how it's harming the people who haven't dedicated themselves to the rigors of this penitence.
Like Cookpot. And like Pebble and Raindrop.
Exactly.
I mean, Cookpot's doing good, okay now, but still, overall, as kids, well, then kids seem kind of happy, but I'm sure they miss their mom.
Half of the story is in knowing your audience and knowing what will affect them. Maybe we should spend some time lying low around town and watching people, see if we can tell what might move these people.
That sounds like a good idea to me. I like watching people.
And
I have a stunt that has to do with it.
That it's, maybe we could, plant the seeds of something. So basically, out of character, I'm saying, we can go and see if we can sense any of the aspects around town, or if something that we might be able to use. We could also, like, you know, talk to some people, maybe try to start a rumor, or you know, kick up more enthusiasm for it, or Cookpot did say that he knows people in town, so maybe we could try asking if you want to ask Cookpot, you know, to point out some of the people he knows. Maybe you could talk to the movers and shakers, and I'll go and you know, I'll do my thing on the streets and watch people watch. Yeah, you know, it's...
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk to Cookpot and get that kind of information. It could come in handy.
Okay. So, you leave, Cinder, and Growl, you go over to Cookpot.
I'm gonna pee.
I am not.
Oh, man. Hey, Cookpot, how's the rest of the day been treating you?
Well, I mean, you've been here, so pretty good.
Yeah, it's rather bustling in here, like you said about the how busy everyone comes to the Starry Sky.
It's the dumplings and the tea.
Absolutely.
Which is good, because that's all we've got.
Well, it's all you need when it's that good.
So, what can I do for you?
Well, you know, before we were talking, and you said you got a lot of people you know in town and whatnot.
Yeah, I know most people. Everyone comes in here every once in a while.
Yeah, so I figure, you know, we're new in town. We don't know a whole lot of people like you do. So maybe who would we talk to around town that, like, maybe some of the key principal people to talk to, you know, get to know our populace here. Like some big wigs. Not the magistrate big wig, you know, that kind, but like some people who are important.
Well, I mean, Wide Awake is the head magistrate, but good luck talking to him.
Oh, yeah, it sounds a bit of a difficult.
You might be able to catch Summer out on the streets. Summer? She's the head warden.
Oh, the head warden. Yeah, she sounds like an important person.
You'll know her. She's, well, her face looks a lot like yours.
Oh.
I mean, if you're, that's, you're probably not going to, like I said, you're not going to see any of the magistrates outside until tomorrow. None of the penitents either.
Right.
That's about it.
Well, I mean, not necessarily the, in that class of people. I mean, like, you know, just the other folk will be around town. Like, not necessarily the people in charge.
There's really not much in the way of, civilian leadership. It's a small town, and the magistrates take care of everything.
So there's no one else you would advise me talking to? Specifically?
No. No one's going to be able to tell you anything I haven't, anyway.
That's true. You seem to have all the information over here.
I try to be helpful to my guests.
I get your guests appreciate it, but what with all the information and stuff? And whatnot?
You say whatnot a lot. Yeah, I like it.
Thank you. It's a verbal tick, in a way. But it's the one I appreciate.
Well, if there's anything else we could do for you, the Starry Night is open until, well, a little after sundown.
Until it's the Starry Night?
Yeah, about. The magistrates like most of the businesses to close up here early.
Though I do wonder, we're going to be in town until tomorrow, obviously, just do to see if we can do the show and stuff. Is there somewhere we could stay, or...?
Well, there is an inn, but, you shouldn't stay there. You and your friend can stay here. My family, we have an extra room upstairs.
Are you sure? I impose.
You're not imposing. I'm inviting you as a guest.
That's generous.
But we get front row seats to your show.
Oh, of course. How nice you've been. How could we say no?
All right, then it's a deal.
What's wrong with the... I'm not turning down your generosity. I'm very happy for it, but I'm just curious. Is something wrong with the inn?
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the inn, but I'll be insulted if you decide to go stay there now.
No. It just, the way you said it first, it sounded like something bad was in the inn.
But no,
it's perfectly fine. It's small. We don't get many travelers through here.
Hmm. He said, "Well,
trust me, you're better off staying here."
I believe it. I believe it. And we'd be happy to.
Fresh tea.
We'd be more than happy to. Even more than happy.
All right, you can tone it down there.
All right, that's what I do.
So God presses why. Cinder, you leave, and you're oot to the boot and tune. So what are you looking for?
Now I'm going to go to the bathroom.
No, you're not.
No.
Are the people here happy? Like, it seems to me like the wardens are a stifling presence. Like I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. Like, they basically live their lives under the iron boot of the wardens.
Mm.
Is that the case? That's the impression I'm getting. I'm gonna scope out the wardens first. Are they just like, you know, cheerless, stone-faced people whose job it is to stand around and beat people up all day?
All right, make a listen check.
Okay. Also, I've heard, just let me add this before I roll. You said that they reprimand people. Is that like, do they beat people? Is it like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, okay. What happens when someone transgresses?
Right.
All right. So listen is at plus two. So I got a plus two.
Plus two. Okay. So you spend some time just sort of walking slowly around town, just scoping things out. As you're walking, you see up ahead of you, there's a man who's carrying like stacks of vegetable. He's got like stuff stacked up in front of him. He's carrying like he's got all these baskets, like empty baskets, but he's carrying like armfuls of them stacked up, and he's just like carrying them in front of him. And you don't see it, but someone hits him, and he like stumbles and falls, and the baskets clatter and they go all over the ground. Some of them roll into the mud. One or two of them break when they hit. There's some wardens nearby, and the man with the baskets goes, "What? Come on!" And he starts like yelling at the guy who bumped into him. And the wardens, like one of the wardens, steps over. And just like glowers at him, and the two men both just sort of like turn to each other, and like I'm so sorry. They apologize to each other, and the one man helps the other guy pick up the baskets.
Okay.
And then they go.
What is the threat there though? Are they gonna like drag this person away to prison? Are they gonna beat him up?
It doesn't seem like it's a threat of prison. There's definitely, the warden seems very intimidating.
Okay.
He's clutching his spear when he walks over, and they've got like knives on their hilts. So he walks over on his belt. He like puts his hand on the hilt of his knife and like slams his spear, the butt of the spear into the ground as he walks over to like announce his presence to these people. And they look up at him and their eyes go wide. And you can see they're definitely afraid of the wardens.
Mm-hmm.
It seems mainly, fear of some sort of rebuttal. You're not sure exactly what it is. Well, with a plus three, did you get a plus three or plus two?
I got a plus two.
Okay. So you don't know the warden's aspects.
Okay. If getting a plus three will give me the warden's aspect aspects, I'll spend a fate point. I'm going to invoke School of Hard Knocks.
Okay.
I was a poor kid. I grew up on the streets. I know a lot. I know enough about cops and what makes cops dangerous.
Yeah. All right. So you get that the warden's aspect is to obey the magistrates or else.
Okay.
The sashes they wear are badges of loyalty, and they are not reluctant to use their authority or their weapons to compel the townsfolk.
Okay. So they will do whatever it takes to ensure the complete loyalty and obedience.
Right. They're not necessarily just going to, like, murder someone right. on the street, but they will smack people around, like, in the middle of the street. That's not outside the question.
Okay. And they are utterly loyal to the magistrates because they want in on the glorious lifestyle of serving them like slaves.
Well, some of them want that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them probably just, I mean, you've met cops before. Some of them probably just get off on being in power. But some of them do try to use this as a position to forward themselves as petitioners.
Okay.
But
so it's a common... They all have, like, other motivations that make them loyal to the magistrates. Some of them want to be in the sanctuary. Some of them just enjoy the position of authority.
Yeah. Also, it's a job. They probably pay pretty well because there aren't many of them.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, it's a good job if you can get it, you would imagine.
Right.
As you're walking, you they always seem to be in pairs or more. But as you're doing, you're walking around, you see, you only count about 40 or so as you're walking. Like, you know, you're just kind of like walking around. It's not a huge town. You can walk around it in like 45 minutes. You count about 40.
Okay. And you said the town is about 1,000 people?
Yeah, roundabout.
Okay. So it's not like a huge ratio of, you know, a third of the people are
working. Yeah, no. Like, it seems to be a select few.
Okay. But they always walk around in pairs and, yeah.
Okay. And they all have spears and daggers. Simple armor, like leathers, and like I said, spears and knives, and apparently helmets. These are the art for the wardens in the book.
Okay. Gotcha.
And they, so they all have those sashes with the 8 symbols embroidered into them. And it's not so much that they want to become living as slaves to the
They want to ascend.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And living as slaves is the...
Yeah, they have to to do their penance.
Before they can...
Exactly.
Vanish into a puff of smoke or whatever
it is. Happiness, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to try to find out?
I guess
the wardens are jerks.
Yeah, the wardens are jerks. I don't want to like plant the seeds of dissent in these people because I don't want it going off too early. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to like start a rumor.
Make a notice roll, Ryan.
Okay.
Cinder.
That is +2.
+2. Okay. So how long do you spend? I figured you're spending like 2 hours,
yeah.
3 hours walking around. So you're doing like laps of the town, essentially.
Yeah.
While you're on your third lap, you look up and you see a pair of wardens approaching you. They're like walking right to you.
I will let them approach, and smile and nod and give them a respectful bow.
One of them, a gruff man with a scruffy beard on his chin, says, "We've seen you walking around the town. Looks like you might be up to no good. What are you doing here in Eight Virtues?"
Well, I'm a traveling storyteller. I like to people watch, take in the local color. You can tell a lot about a town's, you know, comings and goings by just being around and people watching.
Roll rhetoric.
Okay. +2.
+2. That beats their -1.
Okay.
So the two of them glare at you. But they believe you. And after a few seconds, the moment the beard says, "All right, but you better keep the quiet. Don't go starting any trouble. We have a way we do things here in Eight Virtues, and we don't like people disturbing that order. Understand?"
"Of course. I am nothing if not obedient. Can I trick them into thinking that I am, since I know what the Eight Virtues are, if they ask around about me, they'll already see that I've generously tipped that gentleman who gave us the food earlier.
Okay.
I haven't been drinking. I've been humble. I'm not doing anything disruptive. I was honest. And I'm being obedient and quiet.
Okay.
So I want to, I'm going to use my, I want to place a, use the setup from my More Truthful Than Truth stunt.
Okay.
To, place the aspect on myself, Paragon of Virtue.
Okay. Just read the stunt again. How does that work?
Well, the first part of it is that, I can the stunt is that I can oppose attempts to remove aspects placed using trickery using a +2 bonus.
Okay, so you want to place that aspect on yourself,
right? I want these guys to think that I'm legit, that I am embodying all of the virtues, so that when we go and start this, we basically show this.
All right, so roll plus trickery or trick.
Okay. +5.
Oh, okay.
Damn.
Well, you're definitely going to beat them because they have +0 to the skill to resist. But let's just see by how much.
Ryan's rolling great.
They rolled a 0, so you beat them by 5.
All right.
Yeah. So you get your thing with spin. So what would you like your spin to be? I'm thinking maybe
So that gives me Paragon of Virtue with a free invoke?
Yeah.
Okay. And maybe the spin is
I was thinking, if your story is going to be about like
dutiful,
the virtue of dutiful, you can get a +1 to that later because you've you're living it,
right?
Quote unquote.
Okay, I was also thinking maybe the guard, these two wardens, see what a virtuous young woman I am, maybe they will point that out to the magistrate, because I'm assuming that the magistrates are naturally suspicious of outsiders.
Okay, so you could do that too.
Okay.
Or instead, I mean, that too.
Yeah. Which do you think, Eric? What do you think would be better? We get a bonus to doing the morality play.
So I'll say you could either get a +1 to the play, the morality play you're doing.
Right.
Or you can get a +2 bonus when you talk to the when you try to talk to the magistrate tomorrow to convince them to let you do the show.
I think the +2 to talk to the magistrate would be better, more beneficial.
Yeah, I'd lean towards that.
Okay.
Because we could always set up some other stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, yeah, so if you talk to the magistrate, so you get a +2 to try to convince the magistrate to let you do the show.
Okay. Because I've demonstrated to these
right, so basically they could maybe put in a good word for
right,
you that
right.
You actually are legit.
Sweet,
you're walking the walk, not just talking the talk. All right, is there anything else you would like to do?
So I've been watching the wardens. Maybe I'll watch the people now.
Okay.
What kind of lives do they live, other than the fact that they have to walk around being silent and deferent to these?
Okay, make another listen check.
Okay. That is a +4.
Nice. All right. So the people have their own thing.
I'm getting very nervous now because I'm rolling well.
So with a +4, I will read you the thing. To avoid the displeasure of the wardens, the townspeople are quiet and deferential. Streets are silent and conversations occur in whispered huddles. Public disagreements end quickly with apologies on both sides. There is little laughter and no song. The magistrates control the townspeople through punishment and reward. The magistrates buy crops, livestock, and crafted goods, supplying a reliable income to those who obey the law. They command the wardens, who keep the territory clear of bandits, and who punish those who defy authority. For the truly virtuous, the magistrates offer the ultimate boon, spiritual ascension to an existence of pure joy. These tactics have convinced the townspeople that, and you get their aspect, where the magistrates lead, we must follow.
All right.
Do you also, like, want to talk to some people?
Yeah.
All right, so you talk to a few people.
Wow.
That's nice. Old.
Five came home with me.
Wow.
For 2 to 5 players? Can't tell.
The 2 to 6. Weird. 2 to 6.
Is it all in there?
I hope so.
By the way, it's Star Trek the game.
No, we weren't supposed to ever tell them.
The Final Frontier.
Oh. To boldly go where no game has gone before.
We should have had the people guess in the comments what we were talking about instead.
They would not have guessed.
Sure they would have. I believe in our listeners.
Who wants to take a break? You can help me carry something heavy into the house.
You want
to
pause?
How enticing!
Yeah.
All right, we're back. No time passed for you. It's been no time. We helped
I'm
Ryan's...
78!
Eric started that way. We helped Ryan's wife move something heavy into the house. Guess in the comments what it was. The winner wins a date with Will.
It might be a time machine that made me 78!
You started like that. Now shut up. Alright, so when we last left, which was no time at all, Cinder learned about the guards, about the magistrates... Nope. The wardens.
About the wardens and the townsfolk.
So you learn the townspeople have the aspect where the magistrates lead, we must follow.
Okay. And I can...
Right, you just started talking to them.
Yeah.
So you ask some questions, I'm assuming, about, like, the penitents.
Right. Has anyone heard from them? Did any of them ever come out?
You know? No. And the reason is, the penitents, when they ascend, they leave the world behind. And everyone must... release them from their thoughts, or they'll never transcend. So once a person becomes a penitent,
that might be a spoiler.
No, once a person becomes a penitent, you're never supposed to talk about them because basically their philosophy is your thoughts tie them to the earth.
Okay,
And so they can't truly ascend until you set them free of your thoughts in your mind.
I'm sure, it's plenty enough time. It's like in Coco.
What?
You seen Coco?
No.
Well, it's not a spoiler to the end of the movie or anything. It's just something that happens.
So that's what you get. You also, the townspeople believe that the magistrates are very wise and just, and without them, the town would collapse into chaos and vice.
Okay. All right, so we have to figure out, we have to change the wardens and the townsfolk's impressions of these magistrates so that they reverse the awful way they've fallen into doing things. Okay. So I guess later on, when we meet back up in the guest bedroom of Cook Pot and Empty Pockets,
right?
I say to Growl. So it seems like all of these people are true believers, trying to get to this existence of pure joy that the magistrates have been promising them.
That's a. They're not noticing how strict and odd they sometimes act on nothing.
Well, the wardens are fanatical in their obedience to the magistrates, and the townspeople see them as an example, you know, where the magistrates are supposed to show them the way to this realm of true religious understanding or whatever it is they're trying to get.
So even though they're kicking out parents for wanting to hear from the kid, they think it's a good idea? They think just because they say it's good, that it's good?
Well, they think that those two parents, Pebble and Raindrop, by thinking of their son, are tying him to this world and preventing him from being truly free and reaching the state of pure bliss.
I don't get it. I'm sure they got good in their hearts and they're trying to do the right thing, but I don't get it.
It certainly seems like they've taken an authoritarian spin on this particular tale.
Maybe we try to change their minds on that. I don't know. It's not going to be easy, I guess. But maybe we try to show them through the magic of art that, you know, that's not the best way or whatnot.
All right. Well, let's. So we set to writing
yep,
down.
So you create your show.
Yeah, creating the tale of Dutiful.
Yep. Growl. You start figuring out what puppets you're going to need and right. What heads you're going to have to carve. So you spend most of the night doing that, and the next morning you wake up to the sounds of breakfast downstairs and the smell of bacon wafting up. You go down, and the family, Cookpot and Empty Pockets and their children, give you breakfast with tea, of course.
Yeah, dumplings and tea.
No, it's a regular breakfast.
Oh, they said that's all they had.
Well, you're guests. You're their guests.
Right.
Dumplings are for people who come in.
Got it. The shop hasn't opened. Yeah. We're just eating with them.
Right. Well, it's rest day. The shop closed. Yes. They basically have an apartment upstairs, but they use the downstairs kitchen because they don't have two kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
So you go with them and their family for the sermon day. So you go to the north gates of the sanctuary, and it seems like basically the whole town is here. Everyone is out. All the wardens, or most of them, seem to have formed ranks in front of the sanctuary.
Do I see Summer? The one with the scars.
Make a notice check.
Plus three.
You do not.
Oh.
But you elbow your way through the crowd and get in. You see Cookpot and Empty Pockets pick up the littlest kids and like put them on their shoulders so they can see.
We made sure they get the front row.
No, they went for your
for the show. For our puppet show.
Right.
Not for the sermon.
Oh, right, right.
This is the sermon,
right.
Yeah. So after a few minutes, the doors open, the big red doors that lead to the sanctuary open, and you see a woman cloaked in gold robes. She has embroidered down the front of her robes are the eight virtues on each side. They run parallel down.
Uh-huh.
And next to her is a warden that you recognize as Summer, walking like two steps behind this woman who's coming out to give the sermon. So you see, so from this distance, she doesn't really seem to be physically impressive. She's a little bit shorter.
Who, Summer?
Summer, yeah. Okay. You'd have to get a little bit closer to get a better look at her. The woman who comes out, she looks to be about 30. She's slim. She has straight black hair and a long, solemn face. But as she comes out, she smiles And she, you know, she says, "Good morning, everyone. May the virtues of dutiful carry you through your day." And they all say, "You know, blessed morning to you, Magistrate Bell." And she starts giving her sermon. So you can both make listen checks.
Three. Wow. Minus one.
Minus one. This religious stuff is pretty boring to you, Cinder. You kind of zone out for a bit.
All right. Can I, since I spent two fate points already, can I buck for a compel?
Sure. For what?
For my stage terror. I'm in the middle of a crowd, and the crowd's making me very uncomfortable.
Okay. So you're sure. So you start sweating. And just as she starts, like 5 minutes into her sermon, you need to go. You need space. But there's people all around you. You're surrounded. What are you going to do?
There's no way I can, like, sneak my way out. God.
Not easily. I mean, you're in a crowd. You don't know if the magistrate's necessarily going to see you leave.
Right, but the crowd definitely...
At least the people immediately around you will.
I am going to start, like... In my head, I'm gonna completely zone out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start reciting one of the fables, you know, just kind of to myself.
Okay.
One of the stories that we tell to distract myself.
All right.
That's Will.
Well, you got the fate point. So you do, but you just zone out. You miss her entire thing.
I'm basically useless for the rest of the.
As long as you're in this crowd.
Yeah.
No, you're not home. Growl though, you listen. I mean, she gives a talk about virtue and the benefits of the eight virtues that the town lives by.
Right.
She is a natural orator though.
Hmm.
And her lecture is heartfelt. She believes what she's saying, that these virtues are good and will help people.
Right.
She doesn't bring up any of the other stuff about like being a magistrate or being a penitent or anything like that. But she does give a heartfelt sermon about. And she goes through like each virtue about a thing that you can do as a normal person to live by this virtue, and like bring it into your life. And so like she gives a very heartfelt sermon. It goes on for about an hour, but she gives a very heartfelt sermon. You can hear everything. It's like she was born to do this.
All right.
And so she wraps up. This is also the loudest thing you've heard since you got to town.
Right. Yeah.
No one. I would say they probably applaud a little bit. Very, like, golf clap kind of applause when she's done. And it only lasts for a few seconds. Because anything else would be, like, boisterous.
Right.
And then most of the town people start to disperse. But you see there is a queue forming to speak to the magistrate.
I'd like to try to nudge Cinder and head over to the queue.
And then the fox... What?
We gotta go talk to the magistrate. There's a lot of people showing up to try to talk to her.
All right, yeah. Now make that will check.
A lot of people. A lot of people. Oh, minus two.
Minus two. No.
All right. I'm going back to the fox and the frog.
All right. Cinder, you got
cook pot. Are you all right, Cinder?
I have a thing about, this many people. I usually do my shows, facing the opposite way. It's the reason we work with puppets.
Okay. Well, do you want to come with us? I'm gonna go get you to talk to the magistrate.
I should. Can I take a consequence to succeed at that?
You got a negative two.
Mm-hmm.
Take two stress.
Okay. I will do that.
But you manage to steal yourself. You're like sweating bullets, though. It's a cool spring day. You shouldn't be sweating, but you're glistening as you walk over.
It's warm. It's warm.
So Cookpot turns to Empty Pot. He's like, "Why don't you take the kids home? I'm gonna have them." You know, they say their goodbyes to each other, and Cookpot leads you over. He doesn't like cut the line, but he sort of stands off of. He makes himself known,
right?
The warden, you see, she's talking to an older woman. You can't, unless you want to try to listen. You can see, she takes the woman's hand and, like, holds it in hers, and seems to be saying something comforting to the woman. And the woman, like, smiles and nods her head, like, thank you, and walks away. And as the magistrate straightens herself, she sees Cookpot standing and smiles and walks over. She says, "Oh, Cookpot, to what do I owe the pleasure today?" And he says, "Well, Magistrate Bell, these are new friends of mine. This is Cinder, and this is Grey Owl. They are storytellers who have come to town." I said, "Oh, storytellers."
Give a respectful bow to the head. Mm-hmm.
To what do we owe the pleasure? We don't get many of your kind passing through our humble town.
Well, we were happening through, and this seemed like a real nice place. We came; it's very well kept, I have to say. And we wanted to learn a little bit about your whole town and everything that's going on in it. And we were inspired, you could say, by the story of Dutiful and the eight virtues and all that she stood for and everything and whatnot.
It was it was a marvelous tale. We'd love to add it to our repertoire and spread it far and wide if you would not mind.
So here's the thing. You could tell that to whoever you want.
Right.
You need to get permission.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
Right. So she's of course. I mean, of course we want more people to hear the story of Dutiful. It's so inspiring. You also see Eric now. You both see Summer is standing, like, right behind her as she's talking. You see that Summer seems to be acting as, like, her bodyguard as she's walking around. So now that she's closer, Eric, you see her face is scarred, a lot like yours. She has severely chopped hair. Like, she just kind of grabs it and chops it with her dagger whenever it gets too long. And she just has this unflinching, intimidating gaze. She is a no-bullshit woman. Her sash seems to be a little more ornate than the rest, not ostentatiously, but it definitely denotes that she is of higher rank than the other wardens. Mm-hmm. And she's not looking at you. You could see she's watching. She's vigilant about whatever, you know, if anything's going to happen. So Belle says, of course you can spread the word of Dutiful far and wide.
And of course, we want to make sure we get the story exactly right.
Oh, of course, we don't want to mess anything up.
We would be honored if you and your people would allow us to present it, the telling of it, our telling of it, to you at some point in the next few days.
At a respectful volume.
Yes,
one of you roll appeal.
Okay.
What do you got in it?
I got plus two.
Oh, so do I. Okay.
You're aiding, so you can give him a plus one, an additional plus one.
Okay.
Because you're helping him do the thing. And you have the plus two from before.
Yeah. All right. So I'm at plus three.
Yeah.
And that's good because it canceled out all the minuses I just rolled. All right. So that's at plus two, and why the hell not?
Wait, so it's plus five before you roll because of his...
Right, he was plus five and he rolled minus three.
And I rolled minus three.
Okay.
I would say for this, because you're working in tandem, Eric could also spend a fate point if he wanted to.
Yeah, sure, okay. Absolutely.
To invoke, we have to...
What do you call it? Voice of Stone, Heart of Gold, because I'm, you know... that's my own... Oh, wait, that one was meant to be my own... that I have a heart of gold, I think.
Yeah.
I forgot that. I thought that that was, I see the other people, the heart of...
No, you know. I think it was your heart of gold.
So I'm being honest, well, as far as she can, honest and genuine with her, so sure. I'm using my voice of stone to project my heart of gold.
Okay.
So.
And I'm going to invoke my persnickety performer.
Okay.
I really am detail-oriented, and I want to make sure that I get this just right. So I'm going for the plus two.
So you're at plus six now.
Plus six.
Okay. That's a big fat zero on her roll. So yeah. So she counters with Will because you're appealing to her thing, but that just gets her plus one. So you get a plus five.
Yeah.
So she smiles. What's your medium for performance?
My associate here is a puppeteer, and I do the voices.
Fascinating.
You want to see the puppets? I mean, the heads on the puppets right now, they're not going to look like what's in for the show. I make the heads to be appropriate.
Well, I have to speak to more of the townsfolk right now, but why don't you come back to the gates afternoon, ask for summer here, and if you wish, you may come in and speak to myself and the head magistrate. We'd be happy to give you any details that you're missing about Dutiful's story to make it as accurate as possible.
Of course. We would be most honored if you
would. That sounds wonderful.
But you guys got spin, so if you want, that could be your...
Right.
They're just going to let you into the sanctuary to talk to the magistrates.
Oh, okay, sure.
That's phenomenal. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, and she like takes both your hands in hers. Well, thank you so much. I will see you later then.
Another respectful bow.
She's Summer, remember these two. They will be by later. She said, of course, magistrate.
Thank you.
Can I want to steal her voice.
Okay.
I'm going to give one of the characters her voice. Listen. That's what I plus two to listen. So that's plus five.
Well, you as you're walking away.
Sorry, is it six difficulty?
As you're walking away,
it's a really hard
growl. You hear Cinder like, you know, you've heard her do it before, where she's like going up and down, like trying to get, and then in like 5 minutes, she's speaking as Magistrate Bell.
Whoa! It never ceases to amaze me how you do that.
And so
she's right here.
Cook Pot's walking with you. Well, that went well.
We're good talkers, I like to think.
How about a celebratory pot of tea?
Oh, I'd like nothing more.
All right, so you go back to the Starry Nights. He pours you a pot of tea,
and my voice gets fixed.
it's
melodious.
Man. You work on your doll some more. I'm assuming you have notes about what the play is going to be. And a little after lunch, unless there's anything else you want to do.
I guess we'll just, rehearse the play.
Yeah. Sure. It's up to snuff.
Okay. So you spend the morning rehearsing, going over the details. Are you bringing everything with you to the sanctuary?
I feel like... Since we are putting a little bit of spin on this, which I guess we're not really supposed to do, we're not supposed to embellish.
You're not supposed to like embellish or change the story, but like if you just put an emphasis on it,
it depends on the elements that we emphasize. And
right. I mean, the other thing is when you're spreading the story, you shouldn't embellish it, but everyone here already, like, everyone knows the story.
We just want them to see it in a different light.
Exactly.
Okay.
No, you shouldn't embellish it.
Right.
But, depending on what you emphasize could determine. But you also don't necessarily have to tell the magistrates exactly what you're doing.
Right, yeah. That's why I think
we're putting on a play to overthrow you.
Right. I think we should play this a little close to the vest and maybe just go and pick their brains and not... Unless you want to bring, like, the dutiful puppet and that's it.
Yeah, at least show them some of how the puppets will look. Bring one, yeah.
All right, so you could bring... Mm-hmm. Yes, you bring the dutiful puppet. I mean, you could bring notes with you. I mean, you would assume the magistrates are literate.
Yeah. I don't really...
I'll write the
notes. Getting back to our notes, I don't think there would be much of a point. I could make notes for me, but I would have to read them to him.
True.
Right.
Um, But yeah, we'll say that I made some notes.
Or you could just spend the morning just jotting down some notes. Like
I hit like the major beats.
Right.
And if we have any specific lines, I write them down because I do all the dialogue.
Right.
You hit the major beats. Are you gonna craft them or something?
Right after a little afternoon, you go to the sanctuary.
Does my stress clear because of new scene, or am I still stressed out? Clear. Okay. I almost got taken out by just being in a place with people.
Well, it's all social stuff. So, I mean, you wouldn't be dead. You would just be like panic attack.
Right.
Dies.
All right. So you approach the sanctuary. You see these large, I guess about 15 meter high stone walls. Most of them are constructed. Some of them are still being worked on. There's four wardens standing in front. You were told to ask for Summer.
Right.
So you do. One of them creaks open the door and slips inside and closes it. Then 2 minutes later, these big doors open wide. You can see the doors and eaves bear intricate ornamental carvings, and they all seem to relate to the eight virtues. There's a carving that indicates like silence, and one that indicates compassion, to just religious inspirational carvings. There's lots of golden sashes hanging down from the top, so that's the sanctuary from the outside.
Okay.
As you enter, the doors open and Summer is standing there. She does not have her spear with her right now.
That's good.
She seems to have left it. She still has her knife on her hip. She looks at you two and just kind of glares at you a bit and says, "Please follow me." She turns.
Thank you.
I give her a respectful nod and bow.
So as you walk in, the doors close behind you. You see she leads you down a stone pathway that winds through colorful gardens. There are small buildings that have been artfully constructed. They're not really decorated. They're very simple buildings. In the center is a two-story building. That is where she seems to be leading you. All the other buildings are much shorter. They are much less ornate. This two-story building in the center is much more beautiful than the others. You see men and women in brown robes scurrying between some of the buildings. You see one or two that look like storehouses. You see people walking out carrying baskets of food and goods. Some of them are cleaning. They all look tired. They're thin. They're ragged. They look like they've been working nonstop all day. There is still construction work going on some of the outer walls. Not today. It's a rest day, so there's no construction work.
Right. And on the ninth day.
So
penitents don't get to rest.
No. So Summer leads you to the doors of this two-story building in the center. Before she opens it, she puts her hand on the and turns to you. "This is the House of Judgment, where the magistrates live. I ask that you please be respectful."
What kind of volume are we allowed to talk at? I just don't want to overstep my boundaries, you know?
Don't speak over the magistrates.
Absolutely.
She opens the door, and it opens into this gorgeous foyer that leads into a sort of audience chamber. It looks like there's maybe a marble floor laid down. There's statuary on the sides depicting something, maybe dutiful.
Ascending.
It could be. You don't really know what dutiful looks like.
That's dutiful, I can tell.
There's also a big tapestry on one of the walls that is most definitely depicted dutiful ascending. So you can see, like, it's a cutaway of her in this, like, deep pit, and people standing up top, like, with, like, surprised looks on their face. And she's, like, sitting at the bottom of the pit, cross-legged, but, like, floating above the floor, and just has this halo around her. It looks like it's stitched in actual gold thread. Very ornate tapestry.
I burn it to the ground. No, I really don't.
Okay. There are some penitents in here. One of them is standing at a door and nods to Summer and greets you. This man looks cleaner than the ones you saw outside. He opens the door and gestures you into the actual meeting room. Not meeting room. Audience chamber. So there are four high-backed chairs arranged in a semicircle. And that's really it. There's more. This room has 8 windows, and in each window is stained glass depicting one of the 8 virtues. And there are 4 magistrates sitting in these chairs. You recognize Bell. You don't know who the other 3 are. One of them has a mesh of gold. Thread, not like actual gold. He's wearing this mask that obscures his face. Just his eyes peek through. Another one seems to be a man in his 50s. Let me read you the description of the other one. So the one with the gold mask on his face is tall and broad-shouldered, looks about to be 40 years old. The veil of gold thread conceals his face. You'd have to get... It's not, like, perfectly concealed. It's like a fishnet. So if you got closer, you can probably see his features underneath, but it's pretty obscured from where you are. There's Bell there, who you recognize. In addition, like I said, there's another man in his 50s who is the oldest. He's short. Mostly bald, but he's got tufts of white hair, like, pulling out from his temples. And the 4th one is a short, stout woman who looks to be in about her 40s. She has dark hair, long dark hair, that's woven into complex braids. And she is smiling as you walk in. And Belle says, or Summer introduces you, magistrates, this is Grey Owl and Cinder. They are storytellers. And Belle says, yes, these are the ones I was speaking to you before about. My friends, she points to you two. She gestures to the old man. This is Magistrate Moth. She points to the woman. This is Magistrate Petal. And this man is our head magistrate, Wide Awake.
I give a bow, man. It's nice to meet all of you.
Yes, we are deeply honored that you have granted us this audience.
Well, we heard from Bell that you were in town to... this is Wide Awake speaking. Mm-hmm. To spread the word of...
Dutiful.
I'm not good at my job. To spread the word of Dutiful, and she spoke highly of you, so we thought we would grant you an audience.
We very much appreciate it. It's an honor. We just I'm sure she informed you that we have a show. I do the puppets, and Cinder, you know, she does the voices.
Petal like interrupts you. It's been so long. It has been so long since we've had storytellers come. I am, for one, am very much looking forward to seeing the performance. You do puppets?
I wait for a beat to make sure she's not going to continue.
Oh, yes. I brought one over, actually. I'm working on making it look like what I believe Dutiful. I mean, I haven't seen a picture of her, unless that looks like her on the tapestry.
Let us see. She says it, like, eagerly, not...
Right. Yeah. Okay. I take out the puppet.
That's very nice. I like that. And Moth said, yes, it certainly captures her mystique and her strength of spirits. You can't see Wide Awake's face because of the veil.
Right.
He said, it's all right. Make sure, yeah, that's fine.
Can I listen to see what he almost said but did not?
Everything fell.
We're so sorry, everybody.
We edit everywhere. Oh, I stepped on my die. Okay.
Just one tragedy after another.
The house is on fire.
You can make a listen check, yes.
Yeah. What is Wide Awake's hang up? All right. So that's a +2.
+2. You kind of get the sense, with just a +2, he's not convinced necessarily that this would be the best way to get more followers. He's not against it, but it's like everyone else. You kind of get the sense that the other three talked him into it, and he's okay. Reluctantly going along, but a puppet show? Like, really? That's kind of the sense you're getting.
Okay. So he doesn't respect our medium.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kill him!
Alright. Well, we do, Your honors, we do want to make sure that we do this tale justice as it was told to us, and we'd love to hear your telling of it because, we've heard Magistrate Bell's lovely sermon yesterday.
Today.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
It's today. Kill them.
We heard
liars.
We heard Magistrate Bell's lovely sermon this morning, and the proprietor of the tea house Cookpot was kind enough to favor us with his own telling. We would love to hear your version of the story before we present ours.
All right. Roll appeal.
Okay. Can I use my sycophant stunt?
What does that do?
Gives me a +2 to create aspects related to superiority. So in other words, I'm flattering them. They're the ones who really know the story.
Sure.
I want to butter them up.
Yeah, you can definitely do that.
Okay. So appeal.
What kind of aspect are you trying to create?
basically, like, you know, I want to butter them up and make them feel like they have a real stake in this.
So like they know best, kind
right.
of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So roll.
Oh, wow.
That's a good wow.
So that's +7?
That's
Whoa,
a good wow. wow.
That's a good wow, yeah. Okay, so you create the aspect on them. They are flattered that you came to them to make sure that the story's correct, because you're storytellers.
Yeah.
And you're gonna spread this around the world, or at least, you know, the Northlands. And so they are very happy to tell you the story of Dutiful. It's the same thing that the Cookpot told you.
Right.
They use much more flowery language, and they go into much greater detail about like the trials that Dutiful went through when she was down in the pits. But nothing that changes the story.
Okay.
And also things they couldn't possibly know, like what she was thinking
right,
at the time.
When she was down in the pit.
Yeah. When she was by herself, locked in the dark.
So their aspect is flattered?
Buttered up.
Buttered up.
And I'll give you 2 invokes of that, because
yeah.
you did so well.
Good job.
Okay. So we've got a bunch of stuff we can use to make this performance go well.
And so magistrates, wide awake, looks at you when everyone's done.
I'm gonna make a big show of, since I'm literate, I can start like jotting down notes. Well, they feel like writing things down kills the story, so maybe I won't.
It's not that it kills the story. It's that written history doesn't capture it
okay.
the right way.
The way a storyteller does.
Right. You also, as a storyteller, you don't have to write it down
right.
to know it. That's,
right. Because
here we are.
We memorize poems and histories and fables. And
exactly.
Stuff.
Yes. Just what you do. So when they're all finished, wide awake, magistrate wide awake says, "What? So when do you think you'll dazzle us with your performance?"
My compatriot and I are still in the process of making the puppets and doing rehearsals, but I would say within a few days.
Oh, absolutely. We could certainly have it ready by then.
How about tomorrow?
It would take a bit of...
You might have to buckle down a bit, but you can do it.
It would take a bit of hard work, but I believe... What do you think, Cinda? I think we could do it.
I am... very enthusiastic about this story. I think it deserves to be told. I'd say, yeah, let's give it a shot. We can certainly do our best.
Around when would you want us to perform this tomorrow?
What's your name? Petal says, "What if we what if we held the show in the gates of the sanctuary just after sundown? We can get torches to light the area, and then even the penitents could listen in from the other side of the door." And Moth is like, normally they should be partaking in things like that, but on the other hand, it is an experience about dutiful and the virtues. It could be good for them.
Eagerly nod along with what you say.
Yes, I think that would work. And wide awake says, very well, as long as they stay, they must stay within the sanctuary as part of their training. Well, then, storytellers, we shall see you tomorrow evening.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you require from us? Any materials? Supports?
You've been most helpful. Thank you very much, magistrates.
Your kindness is all we can ask.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing the performance.
Kindness is one of the virtues.
Alright.
Yeah, it's one of the only two elements of...
Generosity, temperance, humility, harmony, serenity, honesty, obedience, and silence.
Right. It was generosity and honesty of the elements of harmony that were in there. Also harmony. So I guess they're all in there.
All right. So Summer, who was standing a few feet behind you, you turn around. She leads you back out through the sanctuary. Is there anything you want to do? Do you want to try to like sneak away or talk to anyone, or are you just going to follow her out?
Part of me was thinking of trying to look at the penitents and see if I recognize, but we didn't get any descriptors for hop or for tree
branch,
tree something.
It was treetop.
Treetop.
Yeah. I'll say that he gave you. He told you if you had asked him, he would have told you what treetop looked like. So you can roll notice to see if you recognize it.
When watching someone's physical actions? No, it probably wouldn't count, right?
No, because you're not trying to, like, imitate them. You're just looking around.
-1.
No.
You have a lot of fate points, don't you? Or two?
I have two, yeah. Right.
Well, we got a couple of free invokes. I've got a fate point.
I don't think any of these aspects would work towards it.
Up to you. You don't have to spend them.
Yeah, I'll just say I ain't kidding.
Yeah, no, you don't. It's here. But there's a bunch of buildings around here. You only see like a dozen people as you're leaving. You know there's like 40 penitents.
Right.
So there's, you know, three quarters of them.
Can I try to make that notice roll? Or?
Yeah, sure.
Let's see if I see Hop or...
Hop's been gone for 20 years.
Right.
You wouldn't know what he... His parents wouldn't even know what he looks
right.
like.
Right. He might be one of the magistrates for all we know. Alright, so it's plus one. And plus two.
Plus two. No, you don't. You get a look at most of the penitents, you think. You don't see her.
Okay.
All right, so are you just looking around as you leave, or are you going to try to do anything else?
I can't really think of anything else you'd be looking to do in here.
Summer is escorting us in and out?
Yes. Okay. You could talk to her, too?
Yeah. I'm going to... Summer, forgive me for asking. I hope I don't seem impertinent, but I don't know the mysteries and secrets of what you are trying to accomplish here. Does Wide Awake wear the veil as like a sign of office, as the head magistrate, or is that something else?
Make an appeal check.
Plus four.
Okay. I'm trying to see if she knows why he wears the veil. She probably would. She frowns. No, it's not a sign of office. The magistrates are not that ostentatious. Wide Awake was a... Well... It tells me what she knows. Okay. Before he was magistrate, Wide Awake was a warden. We served together. I know that during that time, he had, when I first met him, horrible burns across his face. He wears the veil to cover them up.
Maybe I should look into that.
I see.
Could it hurt?
Well, I'm well sorry I asked. No. Forgive me. And I kind of like hang my head a little.
It's fine. Those who see him often wonder why he wears it. You did not get close enough to see his face.
Very unfortunate.
Is that a consequence of the job, being a warden? I imagine it must be difficult being the keepers of the faith out in the world.
You got a plus four on your appeal? All right. So she smirks. It's rare that any of these worms try to do anything that could really injure one of my men. It does happen on rare occasions. That's not how Wide Awake got his injuries. No. So I will give you one of her aspects. Her opinion of the general public is that you're all fools and liars.
Okay.
That's you're all fools and liars. That's the aspect.
All right.
She likes us.
Yeah, she likes everybody.
Yeah.
She has a generally high opinion of lots of folks.
Humanity is
she thinks we're two things. Some people only think we're one.
You're puppeteers and idiots.
Yay! We're multidimensional in her eyes.
That's good. All right, do you want to ask her anything? I'm kind of getting a sense of a larger story here, but I don't know.
I can't really think of anything specific that... Drawing a little bit of a blank.
Dude, I kind of, like, make eye contact with Growl, and I flick my eyes over toward the penitents. Did you want to go talk to them? I can distract this one.
I guess I could. I can't think of fans of something to ask them, but...
It's up to you guys. You do know that no one's really supposed to talk about the penitents.
Right.
And outsiders even rarely come in here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they may not talk to you.
Okay. Let's not go down that road.
I would say you could try to get more information about the Ascension, like what this all entails.
Okay. From Summer or...
Yeah, she might know. Because you realize, I will tell you, the penitents never leave this place, and there's only ever 40 of them, and they get new openings every once in a while.
So people either die, people ascend.
Yeah, something's happening.
Yeah. I am willing to bet that people are just dying, and they're...
Could be like overworked and death.
Yeah, worked to death. So this ascension that all of these people are working so hard to achieve, there are only ever 40 penitents, and yet new spots continuously open up. So it must be. There must be a relatively steady rate of success. People are living by these teachings and are...
Ascend fairly often, I would guess.
Right. Either that or...
Roll, listen.
Okay. That is +3.
+3. She pauses... and says, the life of a penitent is not easy, but it is rewarded in the end. The penitents ascend once they have reached spiritual purity. It comes at different times for different people.
So they do the whole turn it to a smell, to a gas, something, or whatnot thing, right?
They turn into pure happiness. Once they have given themselves away of all material concerns. That's why the magistrates are so magnanimous. They sacrifice themselves, knowing that they will never achieve that happiness, and instead stay with us to manage the town.
How did the magistrates get chosen? I'm just wondering. I mean, like, does, like...
Magistrates choose magistrates.
From the general public? Or
from whoever they wish. About this time, you're approaching the main gate again.
Okay.
So you have time to ask her one more question if you want.
You haven't gotten it up.
No. Have you ever seen it?
Seen what?
Have you ever seen someone ascend?
It
looks lovely in the tapestry.
Make another listen check.
That evens out, so I'm at +2. I'm going to see how she does.
She is also at +2.
Okay.
So are you going to spend any fate points?
Um,
And I wasn't helping, so I can't spend a fate point to Cora.
No. Well, you're right there with her. I'll let you do it if you want.
I'll put in a fate point then.
What are you invoking?
We could use her aspect.
Right.
You're all fools and liars.
Baby. She thinks that even she thinks so little of us that even if she tells the truth, she thinks we'll think it's a lie and like we'll lie about it.
Well, yeah, we'll misunderstand it, or maybe I'll like give her a little not like a wink, but like a. I'll inflect my voice, that's the word I was looking for, so that I kind of give the impression of, like, I'm kind of hip to what's going on here.
You know? Okay. That puts you at +4, she's staying at +2. So she, you get to the door, and she turns around as you ask her that question, and she glares at both of you, and she says, "No, I haven't been that lucky." And she turns it open to the door for you. With your check, she's not lying, but she is definitely not telling you something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But she is not lying about not having seen anyone ascend.
Right.
So she opens the big gates, and there are more wardens standing right there. She says, "Well, I can't wait to see your performance tomorrow evening." And she gestures for you to leave.
All right, thank her and
she nods and
bow respectfully
bows her head and then closes the doors behind you.
Well, guess we should get to work.
Okay. So if there's anything else you want to do before the show, let me know. You don't have to roll to prepare the show. You just do.
Yeah. Right. Honestly, I think they're throwing them in the quarry.
It's very, yeah.
Okay, so we're just going to cut to the next night then. You guys arrive at dusk. People are already starting to gather. Cookpot and Empty Pocket and their kids arrived with you, and they brought a blanket, so they lay the blanket out right in front and sit down so they can have a seat and they won't block everyone behind them. There are a bunch of wardens out, sort of keeping a watch, directing people where, you know, to sit and stand if they want to watch the show. You see that it seems to be a smaller turnout than the sermon got the day before, but still respectable. A few hundred people coming out. There's no stage, but there is a very clearly delineated area in the front of the gates in the road leading up to the sanctuary. There's lots of torches that are on tall sticks that have been driven into the ground. To heavily illuminate the area where you two will be. And as the sun sets, the sky goes from pink to purple to black, the stars and the moon come out, the gates open, and Summer, the head warden, and the four magistrates come out. There was excited chatter among the crowd, a little bit louder than what you're used to in town, but as soon as they see the magistrates come out, it's dead silence. Right. Because the magistrates don't usually come out like this. So the four of them come out. Four wardens come out behind them carrying chairs.
Is Summer one of the wardens there?
Summer is there. Four other wardens. Okay. Summer doesn't have to carry chairs.
Right. Yeah.
So four other wardens come out with chairs and set them down, giving them the best seats, like off to the sides.
They sit right in front of the bus.
No, they're kind of like everyone's like corralled in this one area.
Right.
They get like the box seats off to the side, essentially. Mm-hmm. You're ready to go. So the way the performance works is that each storyteller describes an important element that will contribute to the performance. You might play a sorrowful song, deliver an inspiring monologue, or portray a crucial character. Explain what this element of the performance looks like and how it contributes to the story. These elements do not describe the entire performance, they are just the highlights of your troop's creation. Each storyteller must determine the strength of their own performance. To do so, you roll an overcome action against +2 opposition. You don't add skill rank to the roll. Instead, you look at your character sheet to find aspects that would help you add authenticity and emotion to the story element you chose to portray. You may include your high concept if you use your preferred method of performance. Add the number of helpful aspects as a bonus to your roll. For example, if you found that 3 of your aspects would help you perform, you would roll your dice and add +3. You may invoke aspects as usual to reroll and add a +2 bonus. They may be your own character's aspects or aspects you've established ahead of time to prepare for the performance. When you invoke an aspect, describe a new facet of the performance that relates to that aspect. GMs, you may invoke aspects to increase the opposition rank for individual storytellers. For instance, if one storyteller was under a cloud of suspicion, you could invoke that aspect once to increase the opposition of that storyteller's performance to great, +4. So, one of you goes first, and then the other one goes. If you succeed, you just have to remember how many shifts you rolled. If you tie or fail, you could succeed at cost. You must either invoke aspects or hope that one of your fellow storytellers can roll well enough. Mm-hmm. If you succeed with style, you may give your boost to another storyteller to improve their performance, even if they already rolled their dice and determined their results. When you give another storyteller your boost, you must describe how you're assisting their performance. So if you roll +3 or more over your difficulty, you can give a boost to Ryan or, you know, the other guy.
Can we use any of this in the performance? Like, I know with the magistrates are buttered up, and I've established myself as a reputation as a paragon of virtue.
You can use the paragon of virtue. That's your aspect. Okay. The magistrates, both of you can aspect.
But that requires fate points, right?
No, those do not.
Free invokes.
Right.
Okay.
We have 2 free on buttered up, and I have 1 on the paragon.
You can, if you want to spend both of the free invokes and then spend a fate point for an additional invoke, you can do that too. But you have 2 free invokes of that.
Right.
So the way it works is when all storytellers have determined the strength of their performance, so how many shifts you rolled, you find the lowest result by the troop and use this to determine how your story affects your audience. So obviously 4+ is what you want. That's like the best outcome.
Right.
If you get 3 shifts, that's like a pretty good success. 1 to 2 is okay. If you just get a 0... that's, you know, not your best work. Right. And if you fail, you fail.
Okay.
Okay, so who's going to go, which of you is going to go first, and what are you doing? Like, so just describe one scene. You don't have to describe the whole performance.
All right, well, I'm going to, I want to lean on my strength of the puppets looking good and acting appropriately. So maybe this strength of how accurate, like, dutiful looks, and how, like, I kind of tried to get an idea from the tapestry and everything of, like, the way she looks, maybe, like, her, whatever she was doing in it, like, try to get a...
Well, no, it's not necessarily, like, how the puppets look. Like, describe a scene you're acting out with the puppets.
Oh.
And then you say how some of your aspects would lend soul to your performance. Like, how will your aspects benefit your performance?
So, what was the reason again she was put in the pit?
She was a dissident.
Yeah, she was a dissident. She was speaking out against the tyrants. And so the rulers of the town dropped her and her followers in the pits and said, you stay down there until you, repent, essentially.
Right. And then there was a battle on the site, and they were left alone down there for weeks.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they opened the pit, everyone else was dead,
right.
And she was fine.
I was thinking maybe describing the... Because I could use my, my aspect of wearing my mistakes to work towards, like, her showing that I, like, putting out that her acting against, you know, the virtues was a mistake. Acting against the tyrants like her regret of acting against the tyrant, but that's not what we're trying to convince them of.
Well, you can use your puppeteer aspect because you're puppeting. So if you're... what are your other aspects?
I ain't never scared, where are my mistakes, and voice of stone, heart of gold.
Okay, so I'll give you a suggestion. So you're enacting an early scene where Dutiful is rallying the people to speak out against the tyrants.
More emphasis into that rallying.
Right. So you're doing like a masterful job, like working the puppet's arms to make it look like, you know, it's like she's orating and speaking. So you can use your puppeting aspects.
Right. Yeah.
I ain't afraid of nothing.
I ain't never scared.
I ain't never scared because she's not backing down. You know what it's like to
not back. Right.
Probably not the best decision to make. What's your two story aspects?
Where are my mistakes and voice of stone, heart of gold.
Definitely heart of gold because she's like appealing to the people.
She's not wearing the mistakes yet, so
yeah. So I would say that's three. Mm. So you get a +3 to your roll, and then if you want to invoke, you could also invoke that after you roll if you want to wait and see how you do.
So I'll just start with the roll with the +3.
Right. So your difficulty is +2.
Right.
You want to get above that.
+3.
Okay, so you succeed.
Right, but I want to get
more. You could spend
one. You have one shift now.
Yeah.
Right, I want to get like, I could get 3 by invoking Buttered Up.
Mm-hmm.
But how would they
But you just have, you have to explain how that helps you.
Well, I mean, as far as they know, we're working towards making the thing as accurate as it could to look the way they want it to mm-hmm. look. And we gave them a good impression last time, so they could see how how I'm staying that accurate to the story. Would that count?
I would say if I may make a suggestion instead, mm-hmm. the magistrate, you can invoke that to show that the magistrates are liking it, which sort of gives the populace permission to enjoy it as well.
Sure, let's go with that.
So, like, they see Petal, one of the magistrates, like, giving a little clap at that, like, the climax of Dutiful's, like, dramatic, you know, we have to resist the tyrant speech. And Petal gives a little clap, and, you know, the magistrate's nod along, right. which gives the populace implicit permission to enjoy it, and some of them clap and cheer too, and it's an exuberance they haven't felt in a very long time.
Okay.
So that brings you to +5. You can spend your own fate points too if you want.
So you've got 3 shift now. Right. Another one should bring us up to where we want to be.
Mm.
Well, it's then, whoever rolls the lowest.
Right. But like, we want to make sure that we're both like up there.
Yeah.
What can I use this fate? What can I invoke with this fate point?
I mean, you could invoke your puppet master.
Oh, I could just invoke something that I used in that?
Yeah. You're not invoking. It's a weird rule. You're not invoking them for the role. It's just like you're drawing on your experience to put life into your performance.
Okay, then.
But yeah, you could invoke your
affable puppeteer.
Yeah. You're puppeting the hell out of that Dutiful puppet that you made.
Right.
And it looks really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings you up to +7. So that's 5 shifts.
Right.
Okay. Cinder, what are you doing?
All right, I'm going to go for later on in the performance after they open up the pit.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time I've been doing Belle's voice.
Okay.
For Dutiful.
Okay.
I give an impassioned monologue about the very deeply personal road to ascension, you know, how I suffered through these trials and the suffering, you know, I'm gonna like play up the fact that I've searched my entire life for that kind of meaning, and no man, no woman could grant me that insight that I had to find for myself. So in other words, I'm trying to undermine their authority by like, you know, you don't need someone to guide you to this. This is something you have to come to on your own.
Okay. You can, obviously, you can use your actor.
Yeah, I'm going to, my persnickety performer, I'll right. Get the details right. I'm also thinking pro at cons, because I'm good at telling people what they want to hear.
Okay.
And also the School of Hard Knocks. I know what it's like to suffer through hard times and to come out stronger on the sure. other side.
Okay.
So that's plus three. Three.
Mm-hmm.
So plus four, plus five. I'm gonna use my Paragon of Virtue to really sell the hell out of this.
Okay.
So that's plus seven.
It's gonna go by the lowest.
Yeah. So it's
not tied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might as well. Yeah.
All okay. right.
So all right. So your performance wraps up. You also apparently there's a story aspect. Oh, that's what we forgot. Okay. So we have to figure out what the story aspect is. You begin by deciding what the story will be about and what the message it will convey. Yeah. Phrase the story's message as an aspect, like a house made of lies will soon fall or forge friendships, not daggers. So what was the aspect for your story?
Well, we wanted to kind of undermine this caste system that they've set up toward right. ascension, you know, and it's not
maybe
separate but equal is not equal.
So ascension comes from within,
right? Everyone walks alone on the road to ascension, or yeah, ascension. I like true ascension comes from within.
Okay. All right, so write that down. That's your story aspect. That's the aspect you were trying to convey through your story.
Okay.
Which you did. Five shifts was the lowest one. So the power of your story will spread through the Northlands. Your story aspect applies to your entire audience, regardless of how many aspects they have that might oppose you or your message. Your story aspect also becomes a new setting aspect that the troop can invoke for free once per scenario.
Damn.
So you guys do a really good job. So let me get back to the scenario right here. You conclude, you guys, make, a little stagecraft happen. So at the climax of Dutiful's speech at the end, when she talks about, these virtues and how, you know, she discovered them herself and, you impart your message, Cinder, throws some powder into one of the torches and it flares and everyone goes oh and like it shields their eyes with this bright flash and when they look again the dutiful puppet is gone and there's just like the two soldier puppets who released her and then you do the voice like oh my, what happened and there's even like a scent of lavender that floats in the air like so you manage to like recreate like a pleasant scent
I love it
that filters around And there's a beat of silence, and then everyone starts applauding and cheering like actually
oh, wow.
like cheering.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the magistrates, however, get up and quickly. You watch as the magistrates, or at least Wide Awake, Moth, and Petal get up and quickly walk to the door.
Not Bell?
No. You can't hear because of the crowd, but there's still two wardens standing by the door. And you look and you see Wide Awake tells one of them something. You seem like open the gate or something along those lines. And the warden just kind of stares at him. And Wide Awake glares at him and then like moves him out of the way and opens the door himself. And the three of them walk in and shut it behind them. Belle stays in her seat. She's kind of She's like staring down at her hands and her lap. She is, you could tell she's very much processing the story that you just presented. Then you hear the crowd starts to disperse, and they're all talking about the show, and you know, like, how that was made. I never knew puppets could do that. That was so, you know,
never saw my puppets.
Yeah. You made the puppet vanish.
And so they're all talking about it. You hear on the wind. You know, like, so, oh, and then you also hear, you know, talks about, oh, you know, I never thought about, the story like that, and dutiful that way. Cookpot and Empty Pot come up to you, friends. That was incredible. Please come back to our house. So they invite you back. The next morning, you wake up, you walk outside after breakfast. And the gates of the sanctuary are open.
Oh.
And you see that there are penitents leaving. There are spears on the ground and sashes on the ground where wardens have thrown down their badges of office and walked away. Townsfolk are, like, standing outside watching this happen. Belle comes out, and she says, since the performance last night opened our eyes, this is a time of change for Eight Virtues. No longer shall penitents be locked inside the sanctuary. No longer shall the Hall of Judgment and the Hall of Excess stand the way they do. We shall change and remember Dutiful the way she was meant to be honored through. We will never lose our core values of personal sacrifice and self-determination, but it is not the place of magistrates to tell you the best way to go about that and to run the town and the religion at the same time. We need to find a new way. And she, like, kind of walks away and goes back in. It leaves the doors open behind her, and people are all kind of whispering to themselves, like, what's going on? I don't know. Some of the people are like, you know, this is good, this is right, we should. So you've definitely had a big impact here.
Yeah.
You don't know exactly what happened. You can go try to find some wardens to talk to if you want. Or I'll throw you a bone. Summer, comes out. Actually, would Summer tell you anything? She might just try to kill you.
yeah, let's. Summer, and she just takes out a knife and starts shooting.
No, never mind. you don't want to talk to Summer.
I'll kill the both of you.
Yeah, no, Summer doesn't come out.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
No, she's on wide awake side, and he is not happy. So, I mean, do you stick around town to see what happens, or are you guys just going to leave?
I feel like this is a very impressionable moment for them. We probably should be around to, like, maybe nudge things in the right direction.
So Petal disappears, the magistrate. Moth begrudgingly comes around to what Belle was saying, because you realize, or you learn, that Moth is Belle's father. And he's most concerned about protecting her. Okay. So he's going to go with her. Wide awake, he tries to resist. He makes impassioned speeches. He makes Summer rally the last remaining loyal wardens. And they try to hold things by force, but the townspeople don't take it. And he's killed along with Summer.
Damn.
Wow.
It's the last bloodshed. And stories start circulating from some of the penitents about the things that especially because the reason the townspeople were so willing to take violence against him is because some of the penitents who left tell them about what would happen. So the way ascension works mm-hmm. is you were a penitent and you would work yourself to the bone until the magistrates decided, okay,
you're ready to ascend.
Right.
So, first you would go to the Hall of Excess, which was these plush chambers, which were luxurious. They had tapestries, cushioned beds, fine clothes. Here the penitents were provided with wine and fine food. They were encouraged to eat and drink their fill, to sleep and sing and revel as much as they like. The magistrates would usually go down there every night, just to make sure that the penitents were okay. And after a few days in the Hall of Excess,
the other foot would fall.
The penitents were then taken from there to a locked door.
What is it from The Simpsons? Detach the stone of shame. Attach the stone of triumph.
Don't. Which, so there was like a big locked door at the end, which brought them to the Well of Joy, which was the deep stone pits where Dutiful was. And they drop the ascendants in there and wait for them to ascend.
Yep.
They didn't.
Yep.
So it's just a hole of corpses that they didn't clean out either.
I'm sure they're very joyful.
So, yeah, there's just a whole bunch of dead bodies. And sometimes when the magistrates, usually wide awake, got tired of some of the penitents,
they would say,
ascend them.
You're ready to ascend.
And, just throw them in the pit. So that's why the people, once they learned about that, were not too upset.
Do you find out anything about either Hop or Treetop?
You do. Treetop has already ascended.
Wow.
Belle comes out and speaks to you. When she was young, she was down in the Hall of Excess when she was a young girl, about 14, and she was accosted by one of the drunk and disorderly penitents. She was rescued by another young penitent who was working in the house named Hop. Mm-hmm. During the struggle to help her, a brazier fell, and the hot coals landed on his face and arm and scarred him horribly.
Uh-huh.
After that happened, Hop decided that he no longer wanted to be a penitent, but he instead wanted to become a warden.
Right.
Which doesn't happen. But because he was now a new man and changed and wide awake to the way things are in the world, he changed his name to Wide Awake and became a warden, which is when he met Summer. And eventually, from warden, became magistrate. When one of the previous magistrates died, the other ones appointed him, especially because Belle liked him, because he saved her life. And Belle's father was like, okay, yeah, he saved your life. Yeah. So you were right, Ryan. He was one of the magistrates. There was really no way to figure that out unless you, really try to persuade Belle to talk to you more.
Right.
Summer knew what happened in the pits and everything because it was her job to lift the big stone cover off the Well of Joy.
Right. She wasn't going to tell us, most likely, either way.
Not willing. You could have, tried to intimidate her into it.
Right.
But she was Wide Awake's gal. One of her aspects is, Wide Awake is right.
Right.
So she wouldn't have, betrayed him. Wide Awake has the answers, is her thing. So either you would have had to, prove to her that he was a liar, really, because she's crappy to the people and he's okay with that, so they kind of work together. You maybe could have, tried to figure out a way to do it. But you kind of liberated the town.
Yay!
So good job.
I'm gonna go to the caravansary and find Pebble and Raindrop.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell them that story, and I'm going to tell them that he died a hero.
Okay. So you're going to leave out the part where he became a warden? And...
Yes.
Okay.
I sure as fuck am.
they cry, but, well, at least we know what happened to our boy. thank you.
At least we know the truth of what happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
We know the truth, and nothing could ever change that.
Absolutely. I gotta go.
Thank you so much for being so honest and forthcoming with us.
Well, honesty is one of the virtues.
Yeah, totally. We're wide awake to it. Oh, no.
I hate that man. He's a villain.
Yeah. I bet you never met him. But all right, let's go.
You know, they say that everybody, even the villain, everybody has a mother and a father. But you know what? I'm just gonna keep my mouth shut.
I'm sure he had a lot of gold. Either way.
All right, that was the Fortress of Virtue. I hope you guys liked it. I didn't write it. That was a pre-gen scenario, but it was a pretty good one, I think.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
it's a fun little game.
Like you said, I don't know how we could have drawn that story out before we...
I mean, I guess, like I said, the only way, like, if you had really somehow buttered up... one of Belle's things is that she kind of had misgivings about... the way the magistrates were handling things.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had learned that about her, you could have maybe played that up a bit.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting the shape of it, like the broad strokes, because obviously, like, people weren't ascending. This isn't a magical world.
Right, yeah.
They're either, you know, dying, and, like, I honestly thought, like, if we went to the quarry, we were going to find bones.
Oh, no, something.
They were just throwing them in a pit.
Yeah. And if they ascended, great. If not, well, then they just weren't, you know, ready for it.
Right, and they all died horribly down there.
Yeah. The way Dutiful probably did, too.
Right.
If she was ever real to begin with. But yeah, so now you guys can go and spread the story of Dutiful.
Right.
And maybe even the story of Eight Virtues, about how the town rose up. You got stories out of it.
Sure did.
All right. So, any last will thoughts?
I like blimps.